Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
If you want one,
ladies and gentlemen, go for a wild, wild ride with the Watusi Cats. But beware, the sweetest kittens have the sharpest claws. For your own safety, see faster, pussycat. Kill. Wild women, wild wheels. Race the fastest pussycats, and they'll beat you to death. Superwoman, belted, buckled, and booted.
10% of your action be enough for anyone.
Too much for one man to handle. And again, you never can tell.
You girls a bunch of nudists, or you just, short of clothes.
You got two of everything, and some left over.
You did want. You wanted big.
Breast or thigh, darling?
Why don't you take one of each, son? They both look tender. He's got a big motor to feed.
You name it, we've got it. Faster, pussycat, kills, delivers tons more than the opposition. Unladylike karate chops, ungentlemanly haymakers, spirited gymnastics, corrective table etiquette, sandbox jousting, or a muscle-bound cat wrestling with a roaring sports car that's intent upon squashing him like a grape. Bizarre kidney and chassis-rattling chases, and for the first time on the screen, a haymaking, belly-busting, karate-chopping, judo-flipping fight to end them all. Superwoman against man. The prize, life itself. Slashing, tackling, gouging, hacking, flipping, belting, smashing, and blasting. Muscle to muscle, bone to bone. For an incredible evening's entertainment, a film so totally satisfying, see Russ Meyer's Faster, Pussycat. Kill.
Hello, it is 17 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of February, the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us on this Monday, and welcome to Day 12. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. If you would like to get your talk on, as the young people said, I believe, up until a few years ago, you can call us at 503-505. Now I want to say everything like the faster pussycat kill guy. If you'd like to call us, it's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, rape. I always go right to the rape thing with the erotic adventures of Zorro guy. It's the only word, unfortunately, of that entire trailer where he goes, horseback riding, flamenco dancing. The only word that I can really deliver exactly the same way that the announcer does is when he goes, because he rolls into it. He says something like, swordplay, cage fighting, lions, rape. And it's sort of like a Tony the Tiger, kind of a ramp up. Instead of a they're great, sort of a, in any event. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. You can call us, though, at 503-505-6964. You can also email it's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. Dawn Taylor can also be emailed if that's your thing. That is Dawn, D-A-W-N.
Why wouldn't it be someone's thing?
I just want to do everything like some sort of 60s like sexploitation film now. If that's how you get your fast thrills and cheap kicks, you can call Dawn Taylor. It's Dawn, D-A-W-N, at RickEmerson.com. Dawn at RickEmerson.com. You can also text if you like. Our Skype is Rick Emerson Show, and the text box on the website is there, and so forth. Coming up today, we got your clergy watch. Not just a snuff watch, double snuff watch. See, now I don't know who your snuff watch was, because I thought I knew, and it was related to the opening there, the Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. So I thought it was I thought it was going to be Tura Satana.
And I'm so glad that you got that, because I saw over the weekend that she had died, and I was like, ooh, we got to do that as a snuff watch. And then this morning, I was just in my own little world putting things together, and just it passed me completely by.
Rick Emerson is on the ball.
We have a double snuff watch.
You have to get up pretty early in the morning to fool Rick Emerson. Rick Emerson is both the early bird and the worm.
Mine will surprise and sadden you.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I won't be shocked and delighted so much as I'll be saddened and horrified.
No. Okay, you might not even be saddened, but you'll probably be surprised.
Really?
Yes.
Did it just happen?
Oh, yes.
Like moments ago?
Well, just recently. Yes, it happened like 5 minutes ago. No, it happened.
Is there someone you killed on the way to the studio? Be honest.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yes, my snuff watch is some hobo I hit with my car.
A homeless drifter in a shallow grave on the outskirts of town.
We'd never stop doing snuff watches if I had to talk about those.
All right. We've suddenly become a radio program as done by William Randolph Hearst. Look, whatever it takes to make news, just make it.
Kill me a hobo. I want it on page one.
Clergy watch coming up today. Double snuff watch coming up today. Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. That is coming up in half an hour from now. We'll talk about all that is going on in the world of the nerd. Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, is going to join us in the studio. And we've got clue number one for the next round of Name That Snack. And I got to hold on. I got to make sure that I get the winner here. Hold on a second. Let's see if I can get the name of the winner for last week's Name That Snack contest. Hold on. One moment. Wait.
Mitzi.
All right. Let's see. We've got...
Stucky.
It's not Stucky. Okay. So a couple of things. First of all, I want to note that this is from Cheryl. She says... Because the last clue for last week, this is Friday's clue of last week, was shares something in common with today's guest, that day's guest being Jim Willig. She said she actually got not one, but several answers of, quote, big hunk,
wow,
end quote. She said, thought Jim might get a kick out of that. So last week's winner, let's see, last week's winner, Mr. is listener John Baker, who correctly identified last week's snack as being the Slim Jim.
Huh.
So there you go. The Slim Jim was last week's...
Somebody still has not picked up their snacks.
Somebody still hasn't mailed out one of the bags of snacks.
Oh.
He's going to do that today. But if that's found out, then there'll be a beating. Then Cheryl will punish him.
Oh, sorry I said anything.
No one heard that. So coming up later on the day, we'll get clue number one for the next round of Name That Snack. I did email the listener, though, and say, like, hey, sorry. So it's all going to be taken care of. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it. No problem. Nothing to see here. Your concern. Move along, mister. Clergy Watch, Double Snuff Watch, Week in Geek, Mr. Ryan White for the Oregonian. Clue number one for the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. They are one of the proud sponsors that makes today's program possible. You can find out more about them at ehvending.com. And it seems like there was something else that was tremendously important, but now it's escaped me, so I guess it's not that important. We will move along instead to these stories being tracked by Dawn Taylor on your Monday.
Well, the Packers beat the other guys in the Super Bowl.
Steelers.
A man calls the fire department to rescue his lost beer, and a dead cow washes up in Seattle.
Okay. Hey, did I ever tell you this story about my father and the dead cow?
Probably not.
No.
I'm sure I would remember that.
You'll get to hear it later on.
All right.
Hooray.
That's something to look forward to. You know
Hooray.
What it is? That's like a little, you know, it's like...
An amuse-bouche.
I'm sorry?
An amuse-bouche.
What is that?
That's like a little appetizer that you have at the very beginning of a meal, but it's just like one or two bites, just enough to like, you know, it means, you know, amuse your mouth.
It's like an overture,
yeah.
Sort of. No,
yeah.
I was going to say that this is sort of like This is a bit like putting $5 in a coat pocket so you can find it later.
Oh.
I'm just saying, it's a thing. You don't get, you know, I'm just doing it now, but later on it'll show up as an amusing sort of like a bonus. You'll, because we'll have the story itself, which I'm sure is going to be compelling and gripping and entertaining and perhaps hilarious in some way.
And yet there's more.
And yet there's going to be a little something after it. That's what I'm just saying. It's like setting your alarm clock 10 minutes ahead and you go, oh, hey, but I really get to sleep in for another 10 minutes. Hurrah.
Yay.
All right, and so forth. Well, I have nothing else to say here. Except to say that I did things this weekend. I don't really know what they were. That's largely because I'm ingesting some caffeine as we speak now, but my sleeping schedule was just all... I blame my wife for this, by the way. She really is responsible for... Because now I think 2 weekends in a row, I've gotten... It's not just more sleep than I would normally have gotten, but my sleeping schedule, the time that I go to bed and the time that I get up, have gotten completely thrown off because she's working this really bizarre schedule where she's working 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. for like 3-4 days. And then she gets like 3-4 days off. Then she'll work a day of 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. But then the next day it switches 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. for 3 days. Then one more of 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Then 2 days off. And then like noon to 2. You know, and so it's just like, it makes no sense. So it's like her body is, I don't even know how she functions at this point. I mean, I like to think that I can go a long time without sleep and that I can, you know, it's always been sort of a point of pride with me that it's like, you can throw as little or much sleep as me, you know, as the situation warrants, and I can pretty much make it by the next day. I mean, it's like but she really is just like a trooper. I don't know whether this is why she's able to travel so much and enjoy it because the jet lag doesn't seem to faze her, or whether the traveling has strengthened her ability to get by on some bizarre system of, you know, some pattern of when she sleeps and when she doesn't. But anyway, so as a result, a couple days in the past month, like I think last weekend and I think both days this weekend, we ended up going to bed absurdly late and then sleeping until like 2 in the afternoon, which is one of those things you can only do when you don't have kids, I think.
Yeah.
I think if we have kids, I think that would be denied to us. But I mean, and we would just, you know, suddenly we'd wake up like, you know, it's like 2:30. And I think I mentioned this to you before we even came on the air, that I woke up on Saturday and I was just convinced that it was one of those days that like I had just overslept and was late for the show or had missed the show. And I actually, where you wake up and your brain is so underpowered and you are so tired that you cannot read your own watch. And you're looking at it going, all right, it's 1:15. So that means I've got 74 hours before I have to, no. So that means it's Tuesday. What? No. I have to... Honey, do I have to be to work today? And you just ask. You just go, I have to get up today. And she goes, no, it's Saturday. And I said, what? Are you sure? I thought my watch says that it's 75 o'clock. And do I have to be... And she said, no, it's Saturday. Go back to sleep. And I said, swear. Swear to me. Swear to God that I don't have to be to work today. And she said, I swear to God you don't have to be to work today. Now go back to sleep. And so then I went back to sleep. And it was... But both days were like that. And so now today... Then it's like Autopia, where it's like you try to steer off the tracks, but then the rails just bring you back. So now today, I'm forcibly back on a normal schedule. So I'm just feeling a little wonkified inside my own head.
See, and I feel awesome because I did basically that same thing. I was up late on Friday night, went to the Baghdad to do the Dirty Dancing thing.
How was that?
It was great.
What did Eric D. Snider think of the film?
Eric D. Snider did not show up.
Oh, what a bastard.
Eric D. Snider did not show up. Then, okay, and I have more Eric D. Snider in my story, let me tell you.
All right.
Then, so got home about 1:30, went to bed, and then had a movie the next morning because Mr. Eric Snider and I had agreed we were going to go to this screening of this new animated film, Gnomeo and Juliet,
right.
Which is about these
garden gnomes.
And I don't really care about it, but I haven't seen him much lately, and he was out of town for Sundance, and so we wanted to get together. We were going to go to this movie, then have lunch afterward. First thing that happens is, of course, I don't get to bed till 2 o'clock in the morning. Then I got to get up to be at this 10 o'clock screening, which fortunately was at Bridgeport, so it was near my house. But I still just set the alarm and get up and, you know, be awake and have pants on. And so I get there, and there's, like, nobody there, and I'm confused. And it turns out the publicist, Don, shows up, who's a lovely man. And it turns out that somewhere in my not going to a lot of screenings in the last several months, they've sort of decided to, instead of having the Saturday family screenings at 10, they're now having them at 11. So I was an hour early. So I'm just sitting around.
And there's no point in going home then.
Right.
I mean, you know, what are you going to go do for an hour? You know, in a fabric barn or something?
So I hang out and I look at stuff on my phone and just sit around. So then I get there and the movie's coming up and there's like no Eric Snider. And like 10 minutes before, you know, it's going to start or something, Eric calls me to tell me he got a flat tire and he's not showing up. He had had a flat tire, gotten it fixed, and then the tire re-uninflated. So now he has to drive it back to whoever he got the tire from and yell at them. And so he wasn't going to be able to make lunch afterwards either. So now I'm sitting here, and the movie's about to start. So now I'm just sort of stuck because, like, what am I going to do? Just I'd already talked to Don, like, the publicist. Oh, I'm here to see the movie.
Right.
And now I would just look like an ass.
And you immediately,
if I left.
When someone says they have a flat tire, do you immediately assume they're lying?
No, I believed him.
All right.
I really did. First, because I think he was supposed to get paid for this. So I think he was supposed to actually be there.
So he would
this.
Have motivation to be
yeah.
there. And it would be unlike him, you would say, to just not show up.
So there's like three publicists there and a smattering of people with their kids. Because even though it's a free movie, they couldn't even be enough interest to fill the theater.
Right.
That's how much people don't want to see this movie. So Jeff Baer, who does Movie BS with Baer Insider, with Eric, Jeff Baer and I sat there and just bad-mouthed Eric. And it was like him and me, and then further down the row, Gary from the Tri-City, who's it? And that's it. We're watching this horrible... And it's one of those movies that was made, just very briefly, made by committee. It has like 8 different names listed for screenplay credit.
Right.
And then separately, based on an original screenplay by 2 other people, which explains why there were some very funny jokes in it, surrounded just by a sea of lame. So I got through that, went home, didn't have lunch with Eric, and got home and realized I felt woozy. And I just looked at Patrick and I said, I'm going to take a nap. And so this was like, I don't know, like 1:30 or something. Went and got into bed, slept till 7.
Wow.
Didn't get up till 7. And when I got up, I had a fever. So, and I spent the whole rest of the weekend just kind of going, I refuse to catch a cold. I refuse to get sick. And just sleeping and taking vitamins and just refusing to do anything that would tax my system.
Willing yourself to be healthy.
Yes. So then, actually today, I feel kind of awesome.
We should say, actually, just now, right as we were getting ready to begin the show, Mr. Greg Nibbler of FunEmploymentRadio.com ducked into the studio. So I was here yesterday working on some stuff. And it was like, and here's the thing, I don't know what goes on in that FunEmploymentRadio.com show sometimes. And I mean, I do in sort of a generalized sense, but it's like, do you ever just walk in here sometimes and it looks like a bomb has gone off in this room?
There's a lot of drinking, and from what I overhear when I get here and they're still doing the show,
overhear,
a lot of yelling.
The word on the street.
A lot of drinking and a lot of yelling.
Occasionally you just wonder, you wonder if everybody made it out alive, you know, or uninjured. Like, I'll come in and it just, like, I keep expecting to see sort of, like, strange streaks on the walls and part of the carpet missing and whatever, and, you know, like a fire burning in one corner. But I came in yesterday afternoon just to, because I found that, I've gotten to some sort of a thing where if, like, I'm working in my home office. It was one thing when I was unemployed. I would sit in my home office and I would actually get a lot of work done. I think, though, because I've just, you know, spent, you know, I'm a guy, I work a lot, and I always sort of have, just because that's, you know, people say workaholic, they use that term, and about whoever, and I don't really know. I'm a guy who works a lot, though. I mean, I think because by dint of the industries that I've worked in, that I think I have spent a larger proportion of my time maybe at work, because you're 7-Eleven or something, you're working there, you know, you get done off the clock, you're not going to hang around. You know, or if you're just like working, what do you do? I work at a paper mill. Well, do you ever just go and hang out on the weekends? Well, no, I work at a paper mill. But I think if you work, you know, at a newspaper, or you work in radio, or you work at, you know, whatever, you're going to be there. You know, or even a restaurant sometimes. I get the feeling people are just sort of there when they're not technically on the clock. So I think I have gotten into this mode where it's like where I work a lot at the office, even when I'm not on the air. When I was unemployed, I would get a lot of work done at home. But now that I'm here, I think that my brain has once again has made this line of demarcation where if I'm going to be doing extra work, it's got to be here. Because if I'm just sitting at home in my office, I find myself just staring at the wall, you know, or I'll like drift into like watching TV or reading a book or something. I'm finding it difficult to sort of concentrate on work stuff at my home. So I've started coming here. If I'm going to be working on stuff for the show or for Outlook Portland or whatever, I'll just come here and I'll do it here. Anyway, so I came in yesterday trying to be productive, and it's like I walked in and there was just stuff like strewn everywhere. I mean, just like, as my mother would say, all over hell and breakfast. I mean, just everywhere. Just from one end of the... It was like Greg and Sarah had been doing the show and some large, perhaps alien creature had come into the studio bent on overtaking planet Earth, and they had fought him to the death, but had been overcome finally, and he had dragged them out into the hallway down into his lair underground. but they had been grabbing onto everything in the room as he dragged them out into the hall, and so everything in the room was pulled with them toward the door, leaving a trail of objects.
Well, what kinds of things were strewn?
I mean, just like cables and clothes and Greg's backpack and computer accessories and like stuff off the shelf and like the chairs. Huh. It doesn't look like that now because, of course, I spent like, and I'm not complaining about it because it's what I do. And that's the dynamic apparently we've arrived at, is that people dirty the studio up, Rick Emerson cleans it. And occasionally Don Taylor cleans it as well. So I just spent like a good 15 minutes yesterday sort of cleaning up the studio, which is fine. Again, I'm not bitching about it. It's a thing that I find sort of strangely comforting. Not unlike I enjoy doing laundry. But it was just weird. And it was, and plus, like, all of their stuff was left behind. That was the other thing. For a minute, I thought that foul play had befallen them because Greg's keys and his key card, his, like, electronic key card,
yeah,
they were just sitting in the middle of the floor. And that's the thing you don't leave behind because it costs, I mean, I don't know if it's hundreds of dollars, but, I mean, these key cards are pricey. They cost a lot. And they were just sitting in the middle of the floor. So both of their computers, Greg's backpack, some of his clothes, his key card, and his keychain. And I was just looking and just thinking, well, that's odd. I wonder what's happened here. And anyway, and so then I, you know, but then of course my immediate concern was like, and it's, you know, and it's untidy. And so I.
So it's a good thing it wasn't a crime scene,
yeah,
because the CSI guys would be so angry at you for cleaning up.
And also I never would have called them. So yeah, they wouldn't have actually ever been here to be angry at me because I wouldn't have called. Because once the room was clean again, then I completely forgot about whatever might have caused the sort of, you know,
but I mean, eventually if someone noticed that Greg and Sarah were missing and they called the police, and eventually they would backtrack here to the office.
Yeah.
And then they would ask you, it's like, well, didn't you find it at all suspicious that their things and keys and things were in your. And you would just say, well, yes, but it was untidy.
What about all these stains? And I'd say, well, I cleaned those up. What are you, a fool? Anyway, so that was my, I have no point. That was my day yesterday. And that was really, I think, the bulk of my weekend. Saturday, Lara and I, inspired by seeing Chris Witherspoon's movie Rage, which is the movie that screened last Thursday, which he sort of said was directly inspired by Steven Spielberg's Duel. I discovered, much to my horror and shame as a man and as a film fan, that my wife had never seen Duel. And it was like, I swear to God that I'd shown it to her at some point early on. And I may have, and she'd just forgotten about it. But I said, you know, it was based on that Duel movie, Steven Spielberg, Dennis Weaver. And she said, no, I don't think I've seen that. And I said, come on, I think I showed it to you. And I described it briefly, the plot. And I said, you know, guy pursued by a trucker and an 18-wheeler, you know. She said, no, I've never seen that. And so immediately then that became like the biggest item. That was the biggest to-do list this weekend, was to make her sit down and watch Duel, which we did. And which, by the way, has not lost an ounce of its punch. I mean, that movie is fantastic.
It
retains every bit of power it ever had.
Particularly when you keep in mind that it was a TV movie.
Yeah.
But it is
made for like no money.
Yeah.
And that he was 23 when he made it.
Yeah.
Dick. Oh, and then his next movie was Jaws, I think. Thanks so much. Yeah. Appreciate that. So we watched Duel, and then I came to work yesterday. By the way, while reading my email and answering my email, it occurred to me that and when I say occurred to me, it was pointed out to me by a listener. Let's see if I've got her email here. This is from listener Hillary. And listener Hillary says, Rick, I enjoyed hearing all of the birthday greetings on your podcast of last week until I realized I had been forgotten. And then she says, rather charitably, it's not too late. My birthday was last Thursday. That is the 27th. So I guess now 2 weeks ago. I am surely one of your oldest listeners. Wish me happy birthday before it is too late. And then for some reason she signs it, did you see Drag Me to Hell? Which I can only take as some sort of a threat. Is she
a gypsy?
How would I know?
Maybe she's threat. Maybe it is a threat.
So that is from Hillary B. Hillary B. So happy birthday to you. Please don't kill me or my family. So there you go. Please don't harm my loved ones. There you go. That's it. That's my weekend, Don.
Huh. I saw those movies, and then I also, yesterday I watched, your one-man show, Bigger Than Jesus.
That enunciation on it? Do you have to say it that way?
Yes.
Is that like as though you're...
One-man show!
So you're waving at the three rings behind you and the elephant that's balancing in a ball?
Yes, great. I watched it on the giant free TV.
I got that text message from you yesterday. Well, actually, a series of them, and you were noting, you were like, something about the line of the movie, and then like, you know, like my huge pants and huge sideburns and huge everything on the screen.
You brought up your huge pants.
That's
I
right.
just said huge sideburns.
And also, like, and that thing that was still kind of, as they used to say about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, they would refer to there being Puffy Xander. I think that was still Puffy Rick a little bit.
Yeah, you had a little bit of a tummy.
Compared to now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the kind of the puffy face going on,
a little
too.
Bit. Yeah,
and that, so.
That's the thing, though, about the camera putting on weight.
It's unkind.
You look a little beefy, although obviously you weren't. But you
That's
are
nice of you to say.
You are a slender man now.
Well, I mean, I was a slender man then, less so.
Yeah. But no, but the thing is that your sideburns were just a thing of
wonder.
No, they're
like Robert Shaw sideburns.
They looked like pieces of carpet glued to the sides of your head.
Well, did I mention that I told you the whole thing about how, like, as we were getting closer to it, I was like, I got to get a haircut. But it's like the final 3 days or whatever, the lead up to doing that. I mean, it would be pointless for me to try to even express like how utterly and totally and completely like exhausted and sick feeling and just sick of each other every single person involved in that production was. Not that we don't look back now and laugh and love it and be proud of it and whatever, but by the time we got to like the actual final performances, it's like we were just. It's amazing that we didn't all just die immediately afterward, like the Bluesmobile, where like the instant they get to the Cook County Assessor's Office and the car just goes and just falls apart. So that's kind of what everybody did immediately afterward. And so I was like, I got to get a haircut. And then I thought, you know, this is what I look like in 2005 on this particular day. F it. We're just going to commit it to film forever. But it was on the huge screen.
It was on the huge screen. And, you know, and it was very good.
Well, thank you.
Which
I appreciate that. Which surprised you?
I won't say it surprised me, but it did. It did was something of a relief. Because
you don't want it to suck, because then you got to tell a guy like, no, it's really something, that thing you made me watch. Boy, I'm filled with shame for you. You think you can write or act.
Yeah. And because we've all had that experience. Dude,
yes,
listen to my band.
Oh, God.
Read my poetry.
That's
and
the
you,
worst.
And you just like, are, okay, God.
The friend whose band has recorded a record that is bad, or the friend who has made like a film that is bad, and you got to watch it and go, and then you're looking for things to, you know. You know, you're looking for things to come. And I'm not saying Bigger Than Jesus is perfect. Far from it. But I mean, it's the thing where you're watching movie and you're going, well, I find that the sound was recorded really well. Or, you know, or like, hey, that the cinematography in that coffee shop scene was
pretty. Who was your set designer?
Yeah.
They did an awesome job.
The font you use for the titles is really, that really conveys a lot of power. That's the whole thing, is just to not have it suck. If I set phasers for adequate, I find that is enough to let me live the rest of my life without shame. So, in any event, well, I'm glad you. Now, are you watching it? What kind of sound system do you have hooked up to that to the TV? Is it just the speakers on the TV itself?
No. It was the Dolby the sound on
the DVD
player.
Oh, so you got the full
player.
Like 18-piece band.
I did.
Yeah. So, like, give it up. By the way, give it up for that band.
What a great band!
That is the band that came to be known as Emerson Starship, who performed at most of our listener parties subsequent to Bigger Than Jesus, and maybe even before that. But if you saw any of the listener parties, like you saw the one at the Sabala's and the Roast, certainly, and then there was Emerson History X, maybe, was the one at Barracuda. So Emerson Starship is that band came about because of Bigger Than Jesus. And we have to give huge props, by the way, to Chris Morris, who is the musical director, who just for love of the game wrangled like 18 like impossible musicians. And when I say impossible, I mean in the best way, because, you know, musicians are all very persnickety.
Yeah.
And got 18 guys to all get along long enough to replicate like 12 songs from like 9 bands or some damn thing.
Yeah, no,
so.
they were really terrific.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I'm glad you watched it. And let's see. Jesus, it's already 1:42. Let's see. Well, I'll just say this one other thing. I will say two things, actually, before we get to the news, because we got Mr. Aaron Duran coming up at the Week in Geek here in like 9 minutes, and we got Mr. Ryan White, music editor for The Oregonian, who's going to join us. We got all that stuff coming up. I will say this, that we're going to, we started a little bit earlier than we normally do, because originally when we started doing Legion of News and then this show, we had this whole thing of doing them back to back, and that quickly became like untenable. If only because it's like, you got to stop and you got to use the bathroom, and then it's like saying like, we'll start every day. 107 is just, you know, that is just ridiculous. So that we just started saying that we would have a brief musical interlude, and we usually start around 20 after, sometimes a little earlier, sometimes later. We started a little bit on the early side today because relative to how we normally roll, we're going to end a little bit early today. We're going to probably wrap things up around 3:10, 3:15, so you still get like your 2 hours worth. Because, you know, if I do less than that, then I just feel like I'm a failure. So that is because it's funny and sort of strangely appropriate that you watched Bigger Than Jesus last night, because I have yet another one of my many auditions, which I can't even say with a straight face anymore. Coming up, I believe I'm playing Man today.
Oh,
it could be Man number 2, but I'm not positive. I'll have to double check. I believe I am playing. I believe I'm playing. Man standing next to mattress.
Nice.
I don't even know what that means. So at some point, I got to figure out what is it. What is it I'm expected to do? So there you go.
Well, apparently you're going to have to stand next to a mattress.
I guess. And maybe that's it. I just stand there with force and conviction. I just stand and just sort of go, hey, by the way, just back on the Bigger Than Jesus thing for a second. So I mentioned this sort of this strange sort of edible delight of having Storm Large play my mom. Did you catch who played my dad? Did you identify his voice?
Oh, was that? That was Gustav.
That is Gustav.
Yeah.
So, by the way, which is bizarre. Because he's just such a weird, strangely imposing guy. I mean, he sort of looks like this huge kind of like steroid Teutonic figure, like all the time anyway. So that was...
I was interested, the biggest ovation in the entire thing from the audience, though, was Aaron Duran playing himself on the phone.
And I don't even say his full name. We just say, that was Aaron on the phone in the audience. Which is sort of great. I mean, come on. You gotta love that. But it's like, I don't even need the second name at that point. All right. Good times. Well, the only other stuff to get to is stuff that we can probably get to later on. We do have an ad hoc Geek Watch we might throw in later on, because I've already gotten a few emails and messages about this, and I just got another one moments ago. But before we do anything else, look over there. It's Don Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Well, the Green Bay Packers won the Super Bowl against the Steelers. And Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers helped lead the team to the title. In a press conference Monday morning, he reflected on his past and his future.
This game one?
As a kid, I always wanted to obviously win a Super Bowl. And now I got one. It's kind of like, now what?
Oh.
I think let's go get another one.
He's a firebrand. Rodgers joked the win could help improve his relationship with his coach, Mike McCarthy.
As far as Mike and I go, I've had a chip on my shoulder ever since he passed on me when he was in San Francisco, so maybe this will help to bring us together a little bit better.
Okay.
Do you want to hear more?
I don't know. This is one of those things where I feel like I should have just kept Greg around when he was in the studio to ask him, like, what the deal is with the coach and this guy.
Well, some of the temporary seating areas at Cowboys Stadium were not ready by game time for the Super Bowl, and about 400 ticket holders were turned away. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said the matter is being investigated.
I'm sorry, what cut is this?
Three.
That have been taken very seriously, working at it. We apologize to those fans that were impacted by this. We are going to work with them, and we are going to do better in the future.
By the way, and that's, it's not like I'm, worried about going to see the Super Bowl at any point, but that would suck, because the Super Bowl is one of those things that people travel from, like, literally all over the world to see, and then you get
the tickets are very, very expensive.
Even bad tickets are very expensive. And by the way, you got to fight your way through all that crap weather they're having down there. And then you show up and they go, I'm sorry, we don't have a Dan Taylor on the list. I'm sorry, Dan, you're like, Don Taylor. No, nothing under that either. Sorry.
That happened to me once on an airplane. I was getting on an airplane in San Francisco to come home to Portland after a very long weekend away, and got all the way through, like checked in, went through the gate, handed the boarding pass, got on the plane, walked to the back of the plane where my seat was supposed to be, and there were like five other people standing back there, and it's like they had swapped planes at some point, and it was a different plane, and the last four rows were missing. Mm. And of course, we couldn't do anything because people were just pouring into the plane after us. So all we could do is just stand there at the back of the plane and go, hello?
But I just,
there's
would you
nowhere
just,
for us to sit.
Help,
we
please?
Have no,
just, no, like, crap.
Delta, you suck!
I mean, I just can't even imagine. And that's one of those things where it's like, well, we'll make it up to you. How would you like some passes for next week's game or whatever?
I know, it's like, how'd you like to go to the next Super Bowl?
Seriously.
Next year? I mean, what are you going to do?
I mean, and that's the thing. It's like 400 people where you get there. And it's like, and that is just, it's like one of those out-of-towners nightmares. Yes. There's just nothing they can do. I mean, by which I mean, if they can't make it right then, that day, for this event, like, you are screwed. There is no, like, second chance for that, yeah.
Well, this disgruntled fan was shocked. Shocked, I tell you. Shocked.
I'm sorry. He was shocked in what cut?
Four.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Two seats. They don't even have my row, let alone the section we're supposed to be in.
Now, I can't. The guy in the background is way more interesting. Is the guy in the background following the game, and is he excited about a play of some kind, or is he also pissed off?
No seats. They don't even have my row, let alone the section we're supposed to be in.
What is the guy in the background? I think he's screaming the F word at the end. I can't quite tell. Let's play that one more time.
If there's I assume he's yelling at a completely different television crew or something.
If there's inadvertent profanity here, then Rick Emerson apologizes, but I can't quite tell. But let's
No seats. They don't even have my row, let alone the section we're supposed to be in.
I think it's you suck. That guy's fantastic. Oh, man. All right. Well, there you go. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do... time is it? Let's see. Oh, I'll do this one. Authorities in Seattle say bovine met shoreline when beachfront...
Really? Did it?
They do say, they're saying that. That's exactly what they're saying. When beachfront residents found the body of a 400-pound cow washed up by the surf. Seattle Animal Shelter Enforcement Supervisor Ann Graves said animal control officers received a report Thursday that the carcass of an adult cow had beached in West Seattle. The tide later moved it in front of a home. A Seattle Police Department Harbor Patrol vessel towed the cow to a boat ramp on Saturday, where it was loaded into a rendering truck. Graves said it had...
A rendering truck?
It had no ear tag or other identification. It's not clear how it got into the water. Graves say it could have been dumped by owners after it died naturally.
Do we now not even need a full rendering plant? Can we just have rendering trucks that are like mobile sort of disposal labs or something?
Why not? That would be awesome.
Jesus. I mean, whatever. I mean, you know, technology marches on. So if we can find a way to do something in a more efficient way, you know, with less space. Just like last hour, we discovered that we're using less of our brains, apparently. We're able to do the same amount of processing with a smaller amount of gray matter. All right. Aaron Duran is standing by. So do we have a watch of some kind, or are you doing something?
I could do one more story, or we could just
Let's go straight to Aaron. One more here, and then we'll get Aaron Duran. By the way, and then I'll tell the dead cow story involving my father.
Okay. Well, this is the one that I gave you the sound cut for.
Ah, I'm sorry. Give me just one moment then, please. Please to forgive.
Well, an Ohio woman named Jennifer Kisner was loading groceries into her car at Walmart in Alliance, Ohio, when a car pulled slowly up alongside of her, grabbed her purse from the shopping cart. Kisner chased after the car and tried to get her purse back, reaching into the car and grabbing the driver's neck. She was dragged about 60 feet before she let go. She said, "I reached into the side of the car and grabbed a hold of his neck." So anyway, a private snowplow driver named John Schumann was taking a break from battling the icy, snow-covered parking lots where he had been clearing Walmart with his pickup truck, which was outfitted with an 8-foot snowplow. He followed the suspected purse snatcher for 21 miles, all the while giving 911 dispatchers a license plate and description of the car, which is when the suspect, 18-year-old Cody Bragg, also called 911.
18-year-old Cody Bragg!
Cody Bragg was concerned about the snowplow that was chasing him. And here's the 911 call.
This is just called 911 call?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm just a huge... just give me 1 second here. Okay. Just with the whole thing with the whatnot. All right, I got to drag it into
the... This is the purse snatcher fellow.
This is the guy calling... Okay, this is...
This is the guy who snatched the purse.
So he himself calls 911.
Yeah, because he's now scared because there's a crazy guy with a snowplow chasing after him.
Which maybe wouldn't be the case if he had not, you know...
Right.
Been actually stealing the purse.
Right.
All right. Spinning ball of death, why don't you go away? And so then that soundbite, if it were to play, would sound like this.
I'm on state and something.
Okay, I need you to come pull over somewhere so someone can talk to you or come back to the city.
Okay,
I'd like to drive
there's this guy in a snowplow.
Right.
That's following me.
Okay.
And he's scaring me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I want you to go to Walmart. Come back to Alliance and go to Walmart.
Okay. Can you get this guy to...
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to have you meet an officer at State and Walmart.
Okay.
What's your name, Cody? What's your last name again?
Bragg. B-R-A-G-G.
Stupidnik.
Car 47. He's not going to hurt you.
Oh, God. Wow. What a tool.
So,
oh, my God.
Schumann, the snowplow guy, has a concealed carry permit and said he was prepared to confront the purse snatcher armed if need be. Police arrested Bragg a few hours later at his home, since now, of course, they knew who he was.
God damn.
And he confessed to the robbery.
As Don Geronimo would say, what a Dumas. Jesus, what a maroon that guy is. And he just – and so he steals – he snatches the purse, which maybe should be the tip-off. That should be the tell right away that maybe he's not a lot in the cojones department. But then he calls 911 because there's a guy like, you know, he's afraid he's going to get old Jack Ruby'd or something when he's running down the street. God damn. And you can hear that the woman – don't you figure if you're an operator, like if you're a 911 operator, you must get a pretty keen understanding of people and an ability to sense – what people's personalities and or behaviors are going to be like based upon just the first few words out of their mouths. You know, maybe in a way, it's sort of like this job where, you know, you talk to people on the phone for a long time, you know, for a living. And eventually you can kind of suss out what a guy's deal is, you know, after like one sentence. Probably even more so with a 911 operator where she just figures that immediately this guy is just not the sharpest knife in the drawer. He's in a different drawer. He belongs in a separate drawer with the rubber utensils.
I just love the purpose.
I'm on state and something.
Okay, I need you to come pull over somewhere so someone can talk to you or come back to the city.
Okay,
I got the driver.
But there's this guy in a snowplow.
Right.
Following me.
Okay.
And he's scaring me.
Okay.
That's my favorite part.
Okay, I want you to go to Walmart. Come back to Alliance and go to Walmart.
Okay.
Oh, my
God. Can you get
God.
This guy to talk?
Okay. All right, Walt. I'm going to have you meet an officer at State and Walmart.
Okay.
What's your name, Cody? What's your last name again?
Bragg.
Also, I'm not too bright. So was the guy chasing him on foot or in the snowplow?
No, in the snowplow.
Oh, that's what I thought, but
he was
I couldn't.
Chasing him in the snowplow.
I didn't dare hope that was the actual reality. For a minute, it sounded like the guy might have gotten out of the snowplow and been pursuing him on foot, but no.
No, he followed him for 20 miles.
Oh, that's so great.
With his pickup truck that has like an 8-foot snowplow thing on the front of it, and just followed him down the road and had already called it in.
And it was just a slow speed chase, right? Because a snowplow can't go that fast.
And I guess it is a big pickup truck. It's going to be a big heavy duty pickup.
Isn't
truck.
It funnier if it's just sort of like a.
Yeah.
Down the road. Oh, man. Wow. Well done, Cody Bragg.
Cody Good Bragg.
God almighty. All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. God damn, I love people and loathe them all at once. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program from geekinthecity.com, Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. Hello, sir. How are you on this fine Monday?
I am fantastic. How are you all doing?
I am rolling, brother. How was your weekend? Satisfying in every way?
So far, I'm only halfway through. My weekends are Sunday and Monday.
Oh, that's right. You get Monday off as well.
Yeah.
Hey, is my wife over at your house doing some quilting or some damn thing?
She's about to show up, so if it becomes really loud and chaotic in the background, that's what that is.
All right. Okay. If I hear tankards of gin being consumed. I'm sorry. Yeah, that wasn't me. I didn't say that. Yes. Indeed.
They would never drink the gin.
No.
Wine.
No, of course not.
Gin's my bag.
So what is going on in the world of nerdality, sir?
Well, first, you know, I had actually sent you a couple stories, but something just popped up that I have to mention right now.
Okay, because you had a Mayor Man update, and so I want to get to that in a second, but what just popped up?
Yeah, I want to talk a little more about that later, but I don't know if you guys have already talked about some of the Super Bowl ads last night, but specifically the one for Chrysler where Detroit was kind of – it was more an ad about getting Detroit back, you know, on its feet than an ad for Chrysler.
No, I don't know. I might have missed that one.
That one was actually pretty cool. It was a really slow kind of beat to Eminem's the song from 8 Mile, the kind of the big song.
Oh, the Lose Yourself?
Yeah, Lose Yourself. It's just that beat playing through, and this guy's driving through Detroit, and it's Eminem doing this voiceover of like, you know – and basically saying we will rise up, we will do better, quit making us a joke or whatever. And it was a really cool commercial. It actually kind of made you want to visit Detroit, of all things.
Well, that's one of those things where the Super Bowl commercials are impressive in the sense that, among other things, the Super Bowl commercials will often pull in a talent on screen or a voice actor. And it'll be some guy that that you never see doing commercials. I remember a couple of years ago, there was that great commercial for like H&R Block, and it was Willie Nelson and MC Hammer. And it was great because it's like you never see Willie Nelson really doing a commercial for anything. Like he doesn't advertise a lot of stuff. And so the idea that Eminem would do a TV commercial is sort of unheard of. But it's sort of like doing a commercial overseas in some ways that like the rules kind of don't apply somehow for the Super Bowl, that you don't lose, you know, street cred or whatever the way you typically would as a performer. Yeah.
Well, anyway, what kind of fueled this? What's popping in my head right now is that basically the mayor of Detroit is opening, you know, suggestions up to the public about, you know, kind of help, you know, get tourism and people and just reinvigorate Detroit. And they've all been these really kind of like classy pitches. Like the Chrysler commercial was really cool, but someone just pitched a concept for a 18-foot tall solid steel and iron statue of RoboCop in downtown Detroit.
Nice.
That would be fantastic.
And the mayor actually responded, "While we don't think this is possible, we are open to any suggestion. Thank you."
Oh, come on. See, I mean, this is that's exactly the sort of thing that would reinvigorate a once proud great city and make it make it live and breathe again.
It's like that town in Switzerland that has a statue of Freddie Mercury for no reason at all.
It's just there so they can dance around it like a maypole once a year. Yeah.
You tell me you wouldn't visit Detroit if you knew you could see, you know, Murphy, 18 feet tall and made of iron.
Well, I feel bad sometimes for making fun of Detroit because we have a lot of listeners from Detroit or from Michigan. And I seem to know actually an astounding number of people, like a disproportionate number of people from Ryan White actually is from Michigan. And the people who... you know, who have moved away, but obviously still, you know, they still love where they're from, or they love, you know, they're proud of it or whatever, or they just think that it gets a bum rap. And like our friends, Thomas Gill and Keelan, you know, the same way, where it's like every time I make fun of Detroit, I'll get, you know, a little bit of some snark from one of those guys. And when I think it was you might have been the one, Aaron, who actually posted or you passed along to me that that photo essay of the ruins of Detroit, where it's like a modern.
Yeah, the book that was this great coffee table photography book. Yeah, The Ruins of Detroit. It's just gorgeous
looking.
And it's,
I forget what they call it, but it's like urban, I want to say urban spelunking, but that's wrong. But it's like where people kind of go into the hearts of still active cities and
I find. I think that is what it's called.
Maybe, and they find the sections of it that are just destroyed and falling apart. And the stuff in Detroit looks like those shots in Chernobyl. It's amazing. And I sent it to Keelan. I was like, hey, you might, you know, you're from Detroit. You might find this interesting. And he sent me something really, really great back. He said, you know, there are parts of Detroit that look a lot like that and that I've been to those places. He said, but just FYI, here's some photographs I took of nothing in particular, just photographs from last year when I went to see my mom. And it was just some photos of him and his mom, like around town. And it was like it looked like you were in Seattle. It looked like it was an absolutely beautiful, clean, sparkling, great looking city. And I immediately felt really bad for being one of those guys who kind of piles on the Detroit, which doesn't stop me from doing it every now and again. But it did make me sort of realize that it is not a wholly representative photo, or that there is something there to build on. It's not like the entire city has just fallen to, you know, to just robots and cockroaches.
Yeah, well, I think Detroit, to pull this all back into like pop culture-y stuff, I think what Detroit kind of needs to get people to quit making jokes about it is a show on the same caliber as The Wire, to kind of, because The Wire kind of lifted Baltimore back up.
Yeah, or at least made you not want to laugh at it for fear that they'll kill you.
Yeah, or at least our perception of it, like, well, it's still a crappy town, but you know, they filmed The Wire there, you know. So, I mean, little things like that can do wonders for us.
I got to tell you, actually, that our good friend Lisa Desjardins, so she lived in Baltimore and then in D.C., and she now lives in Virginia. When she got married, her husband, Jason, I think, was very strongly advocating that they move to Virginia. And I know that she was really wholeheartedly opposed to that because she wanted to either stay in D.C. or she wanted to live in Baltimore again. And she said she felt like kind of a big sellout just moving back to, you know, to wherever she lives in Virginia now. But Baltimore, in a strange way, even though it's not like that city's really in the comeback trail, The Wire, at the very least, did sort of put it on the map in the sense that, you know, the people. The Wire and David Simon and all of his interviews and press about Baltimore, you at least had the sense that there was an active attempt to revitalize the city, that they did recognize how badly that place had gotten off the rails. And, you know, and I guess maybe Detroit is the same way. I'll have to go find that. I just hearing your description of it makes me want to see it.
Yeah. So the other thing I want, before I get to Project Mirror Man, I don't know if you've seen the ads for EA Games Dead Space 2. Where it's your mom will hate it.
Yes, I have actually. I saw a couple of those ads, and then I saw there was some snarky column written by some video game mom who said she was all offended by the ads.
Well, yeah, now they're taking it one step further. This right-wing nitwit group called Common Sense Media actually wants to take EA Games to court on the basis that they are violating the ESRB's principles and guidelines as well as the responsible advertising practices.
And the ESRB is that's the Electronic Safety Ratings Board or some
crap?
Yeah,
that's what rates it. Yeah, that's who rates the game. So, yeah, it'd be the equivalent of, like, you know, the Miramax company being sued along with the MPAA, you know, by a parental group.
I don't understand why would they be, because if you haven't seen the ads are they got Dead Space 2, which obviously is a sequel to Dead Space, and they got a bunch of moms in a room somewhere in a focus group, and they were real people, and they had them play the game, and they filmed their reaction, and then they just excerpted out all the most horrified and shocked reactions. This game is disgusting! And they just edited those together for like 30 seconds, and that's the ad, and it just says, your mom will hate it, which is sort of great.
Yeah.
It is kind of great. No, this parental group is angry because they say that it is only reinforcing stereotypes that parents do not understand what kids are playing, and that by showing how awful their parents will react, they are supporting making a profit by disobeying your parents, basically.
People are such tight asses. I'm glad I don't have kids so I can just not care about any of this, because people just are way too uptight. They need to loosen up a whole lot. And, I mean, look, let's be honest. If the parents and the kids understand exactly the same things and are into the same things, one of them is really lame. probably the parent, because it means that it's a parent who is dwelling in the land of, I'm going to be your pal, as opposed to, like, being an actual parent. So, but it's also possible that your kid is just a nerdling.
That being said, Dead Space 2 is friggin' righteous.
I have, and I actually have, Dead Space, the original Dead Space at home, but I have not seen, I haven't played or seen much about Dead Space 2 really behind
the ads. Dead Space 2 is if, like, H.R. Giger got to design a horror video game.
I know the reviews on it, the advanced stuff that I saw, there was some article that came out, it was like in Cracked or something, and they were talking about how it was, one of those games that makes you sort of, where you're a grown man, but you're sitting there like turning on the lights in the house because you don't want to play it and then have to walk down the long, dark hallway to take a whiz or something.
Yeah, you play it for an hour and you're like, I'm going to go hug a puppy and, make some sugar cookies when I'm done playing this.
Awesome. What is, go ahead.
Fritter cookies?
Sugar cookies.
Oh, sugar cookies.
I don't know.
Okay.
That seemed like something you should do after being eviscerated.
Okay. Jobin cookies. Let's see. The Hobbit. Before we get to Merriman, so there's a Peter Jackson Hobbit. Whatever. It's going forward. It's going to go forward. It's actually filming.
Yeah. Monday, March 21st, they're going to start shooting in New Zealand. So after years of setback, and I think MGM going bankrupt like a bazillion times. It'll be under Peter Jackson. They are going to start filming The Hobbit Monday, March 21st.
Let's quickly go around the room here. How do we feel about Peter Jackson making The Hobbit? Don Taylor?
I think it's great.
Aaron Duran?
If they were just making one movie, I'd be happy. But stretching it into two is a bad idea.
See, that kind of bugs me. The idea the other movies were all just one. I mean, like even the Fellowship, which I think is the longest of the three books, was only one.
I have to admit, I was a little disappointed when Guillermo del Toro dropped out, because I wanted to see what he would do with it. But I agree with Aaron, though. I think there's no good reason for it to not be one movie.
Mainly because the second movie is going to be 100% either original content or based on Tolkien's notes, which means we're going to get like excerpts from the Silmarillion and crap like that.
Oh, no, which is just terrible. Nobody wants that. That's the thing is, I'm a big fan of Peter Jackson doing it, if only because it appeals to my sense of order. The idea that there will be a consistent look to all of the films, even though it's going to be that weird, it's going to be that weird Star Wars thing, too, where, Gollum, looks way more real, in these first, in The Hobbit, and then it's like, depending on what order you watch them in. I like the idea that there'll be a consistent look, but it does seem like he's like 3 for 3 with those Lord of the Rings movies, and it's not like Peter Jackson's a hack. I mean, I don't know that Peter Jackson's ever really made – he's made movies I don't really care for, but I don't know that he's made a movie that I would ever call flat-out bad. But it just seems like I don't like him giving himself a chance to screw it up somehow. I like the idea that he's going out with a perfect batting average. But, I mean, what are you going to do? I guess if anybody's going to do it, I would rather he do it, because it seems like he – for good or bad, he and Philippa Boyens and his wife, whose name I forget at the moment, but they have a pretty good understanding. They have a good internal understanding of how those books work.
His wife, the Nazgul?
Yes, that's right. She's the scream of the Ringwraith. I forgot about that. Yeah. Well remembered, nerd. All right. So the big news everybody cares about, Merriman.
Project Merriman. I mentioned it last week, but I want to talk more about it this week. Project Merriman is it's an event happening with City Hall, Mayor Sam Adams, the Alter Ego Society, and the Stumptown Comics Fest. Basically, all through the month of February, you have a chance to design an original superhero costume that will then be created, molded, shaped, and then worn by Mayor Sam Adams at the Stumptown Comics Festival. And the winning, there are some rules. You have to live within the Portland metro area. You have to submit it on the official template, which you can find at alteregosociety.com. The costume cannot be any pre-existing character, obviously no one that's been copywritten. And the costume has to be family-friendly. So if the judges decree that you kind of, went over the top or anything like that, they'll disqualify your costume design. But somebody in Portland will be designing a superhero costume worn by our mayor.
And so he will be wearing this when?
He is going to wear it on April 16th and 17th. which is when the Stumptown Comics Fest happens at the Oregon Convention Center this year.
Awesome. Are you going to be designing something?
I can't design a costume to save my life. All my costumes are just dudes in fedoras and trench coats.
Okay.
And that's sure. That's not a very compelling costume. But if you check out the Alter Ego Society, or actually, little shout out, the Things on the World commercial that airs on the CW, mm-hmm. on a Northwest 32, every single one of those costumes were designed by people in the Alter Ego Society. So that giant Iron Man looking dude and all that stuff there.
I didn't know that is a fantastic commercial, by the way, the Things from Another World commercial that airs on the CW. So excellent. All right. So what is the is there a website for the Alter Egos Society?
Yeah, it's just alteregosociety.com. It's all one big word. So alteregosociety.com. They've got all the information there. Or if you just go to Facebook and type in Project Mirror Man, it comes right up.
Awesome. Fantabulous. Aaron Durand, you can read more of his works. Find out all that is going on in his world at geekinthecity.com. Geekinthecity.com. All right, my friend. Have a fantastic Monday.
Thank you. You too.
There you go. That is Aaron Durand, ladies and gentlemen, with The Week in Geek. Awesome. All right. You should design something for Project Mirror Man.
Okay, sure.
We should ask, what's his name, Seth Aaron, if he's going to do it.
Yeah. He doesn't live, I don't think he lives within.
Oh, he lives in Vancouver.
He lives in Vancouver.
Well, he could, you know.
I don't live in the Portland metro area.
So it falls to me.
Because I live in Washington County.
So really, this is a thing where it's like, I must return the ring to Mount Doom, or, you know, whatever. All right.
We could kill two birds here, where we could design our evil clown mascot costume for our Emerson News Network mascot, and we could maybe get Sam Adams to wear it.
You have no idea how excited I am about that evil clown thing. I mean, really, it's just this, and I'm not even saying it has to be an evil clown. I'm just, because it doesn't have to be an evil clown to frighten you,
no,
right?
You're
just
any, sort of yeah, any professionally wrought clown will frighten me.
You're just yeah, it's just clowns.
They're all
sort of,
evil as far as I'm concerned.
Clowns, sort of in general. So
evil
awesome.
Clown is a redundancy.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I'll tell you what, we're going to do this. We're going to come back here in just a skosh with our good friend Ryan White, music editor for The Oregonian. That is all on the way. Plus, we got Clergy Watch coming up, Double Snuff Watch. I still don't know who the second Snuff Watch is. So it's all, I guess we're all going to find out at exactly the same time. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program right here at the Emerson News Network. Stay right there, won't you please?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Was a moonlight mishap? You lost your party hat. Seems your lifestyle ain't so worthwhile after all. A heavy-hearted taxi ride and a walk on the wild side. Did you call an angel let you down? Gonna lay low and play it straight. It's time to rejuvenate. Gonna kickstart your heart to come around. I can't tell you now, I've really gotten the blues. I can't tell you now that I've walked in your shoes. Give me the sweet lowdown. You better get out the way. It's history made the hard way. From all
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. Coming up in mere moments, Mr. Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian, will join us. Also, we've got a clergy watch coming up. Our first clue for this week's round of Name That Snack from EH Vending. Let's see. We've also got a double snuff watch on the way. Okay, is it male or female?
Male.
Entertainer.
In a way.
In a way. I knew you were going to say that. That's in a way.
Oh, I'm sorry. The dead person is female.
That's an odd mistake for you to have made. So it couldn't have been somebody very notable. It must have been somebody. Was it somebody who whose work was known, but who themselves was behind the scenes?
No, it was somebody who came into the public eye just suddenly and very briefly a few months ago, and is now dead.
It's not Clara Peller.
No.
I guess that wouldn't have been a few months ago.
No.
All right. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, tomorrow we'll be speaking with Ms. Joelle Carter. She plays Ava Crowder on the FX series Justified, which, as Kurt Loder would say, is something you really ought to try to catch. It is a fantastic show. It's going to be starting its second season Wednesday on FX. Tomorrow, Joelle Carter will be joining us, which, as you said, it puts us one step closer to Walton Goggins. So, and that's one step. And see, the thing is, Walton Goggins... I was going to say, it's like Walton Goggins puts us one step closer to Timothy Oliphant, but really, Walton Goggins puts us zero steps away from Walton Goggins, which is why that's freaking awesome.
I mean, Timothy Oliphant would be awesome. No, there's no question of that, but Walton Goggins is the holy grail as far as I'm concerned.
Do you get the feeling if you talk to Timothy Oliphant, though, his answers would just be sort of like short and kind of wry and a little crazy?
Yeah, I have a feeling he's going to be one of those guys like we get the junket sound clips every once in a while. We're like, so tell us about this new movie you're making. It was exciting to work with Michael Caine. He puts a lot into his work.
The junket soundbites are actually the junket soundbites are bad, but you know what's almost worse is when, at least for me, is when you get like the Norm Macdonald answer, where it's just some like weird left field sort of response that goes nowhere. We go like, hey, so. Tell me about, you know, what it's like to work with, Norm Macdonald, tell me what it's like to work with, Dana Carvey. Boy, acting, man, I'll tell you. And then just going like, okay. And then it's, and those are the sorts of interviews that it's like interviewing somebody who's in character, which is a little bit of what it's like to interview Norm Macdonald, where it's like you're never, like the sands are just shifting underneath you, like at every conceivable moment. So that is coming up tomorrow, Joelle Carter from the television series Justified. Let's welcome out of the Rick Emerson Radio Program from the Oregonian, Mr. Ryan White. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hey, it occurred to me that Anna Griffin's got her intro music, but you do not. So I should create an intro theme for you.
Okay.
Do you have a preference?
Not offhand.
Have we had this discussion before and I've just forgotten about it? I don't think
we have.
All right. Well, you think on it. I mean, I can sort of make an executive decision and find something, but if you have a preference for intro or theme music,
I'll
can
think on it. Feels like the kind of thing that I should have an opinion about.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you got it. You know, it's like deciding what your ringtone is going to be or what your first top five is going to be. It's a...
I actually asked Rick at one point after I'd been doing his show.
Just call me Ricketts.
No.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, that's my new name for you, Ricketts.
All right. Well, no. There is someone who refers to me as that, you know.
That could be your clown name.
Please don't call me Ricketts the Clown.
But I'd been doing his show on a weekly basis, doing basically what you're doing and only about DVDs. And I'd been coming in for a while. And after a few months of it, I said, can I have a theme song? Everybody else has a theme song. And then he's like, pick a theme song. And so I did.
But then it just becomes an overwhelming thing because you feel like it's going to define you as a person. Mm-hmm. And the minds and hearts of the audience, it's going to say volumes about you. So
what is your ringtone?
Just my generic ringtone on my phone is the Arrested Development theme.
Ah.
I have, and I don't remember where I found it now. It's one of those things, but it's, I lucked into, I have this, I have an instrumental version of the theme. So that is my, let's say I alternate, let's see, I alternate actually back and forth. There's this, and you know, and Dawn's heard me play this on the show. There's one of those things that I've, every now and again, I will switch my ringtone over to something else, but then I switch it back because I just... Because I have this strange sort of, I think as Stephen King once said, in my character I have this sort of like, I have this kind of this low grade juvenile rebellion that is intertwined with this kind of conservatism is the wrong way to put it, but I just I try not to make a fuss or a ruckus anywhere, and so I try to avoid having anything you know that's going to be very off putting, which is why I do not have this as my ringtone all the time.
Rick! Hey, buddy, it's Sam Kinison. Pick up your phone, buddy. Pick up your phone! Oh! Oh! Somebody's calling you, dick.
I mean, it's the sort of thing that if I were a, you know, a braver version of my... Oh, damn it. Hold on. If I were a braver version of myself, I would just use that. But it's like I don't wish to cause a scene in public.
Oh, why not?
What are you going to do? What is coming up in the world of the Oregonian, sir?
Oh, we've got shows this week. Trombone Shorty and Los Amigos Invisibles. I always mess that one up.
Me too.
At the Roseland tomorrow. And I was supposed to be at Dante's, and they sold out Dante's, so they moved it over to Roseland.
Not the same bill, because the Trombone Shorties was like that was the blues thing you were talking about.
Same bill. It's a kind of a co-headline tour that they're doing. Los Amigos are this kind of South American disco rock band, and then
how is it possible that there wasn't already a band called Los Amigos
Invisibles?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. I didn't. Okay.
I'm just shortening it all now right. Because I'm stupid and American.
Fair enough. Excellent.
So that's a co-headlining bill, which, and I have professed my love for Trombone Shorty and Orleans Avenue many times. It's what cool kids do in New Orleans is they put together really, really great bands. And he's like 23, 24 now. And so that'll be great. And then Social Distortion on Wednesday night. And then next week we get Kesha.
You know, the sole exposure I have to Kesha really has come through Fun Employment Radio, because Greg and Sarah are sort of strangely fascinated with her. And I don't know why. They just developed some sort of strange fixation on her, which is the only reason that I actually.
I was watching video of her doing Saturday Night Live late last year, earlier this year. And there were like people in astronaut suits dancing behind her and weird confetti cannons and lasers that shoot. None of it made any sense. And at that point, I just decided that she's actually just playing a joke on everybody. And every time she cashes a check, she laughs a little more. Like she's trying to.
I admire any pop star who just puts the dollar sign right in the middle of their name.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on. You know, really.
It's, you know, you can talk about her and Lady Gaga. And like, okay, Lady Gaga is probably just a knockoff of Madonna, but she's not a cheap knockoff.
Right.
Like when she says something like, I'm afraid to have sex because I don't want to lose any creativity out of my vagina. Kesha recently said, I knew everything I needed to know about sex when I was 7. No, that's just gross, and it's not interesting. I don't want to know more. I want to call Child Protective Services on her 7-year-old, you know, for her 7-year-old self.
I must have missed that somewhere. I think you were the one who actually, you said something really great about Lady Gaga at one point, the wonderful thing about her, in your opinion, was that there was absolutely nothing real about her in any way.
Yeah.
Every single thing you saw on the surface was a contrivance or a construct of some kind. That there was, in fact, no real her to her anyway.
Nope.
That there was somewhere. We just never got to see it.
Yeah.
And there is something sort of pure about that in a strange kind of all-American way.
Especially when we're, you know, in a culture where we're so given to oversharing on Twitter and Facebook and every little thing. That to just completely give none of yourself up, I think, is brilliant. And it's probably the best way to go about things if you are a pop star and or rock star.
I think I just realized why Lady Gaga gives me the heebie-jeebies. It's because she reminds me of a circus clown. It's that same thing. It's that otherworldliness, the kind of human, but really kind of not, kind of scariness.
Let me just play you a little bit of so this is I think I mentioned this, it was in the first show or maybe earlier in this show, that I had assembled five different versions of people butchering the national anthem because of the Christina Aguilera thing. I mean, and I had all the I had all the hits there.
I missed that one.
I had Roseanne Barr. I had Leslie Nielsen from Naked Gun. I mean, I had like, and I was
Enrico Palazzo.
The best part of that entire sequence is when they cut to Enrico Palazzo bounding gag, just going just hitting his head into the pillow over and over again, and it says in huge letters, "Opera singer Enrico Palazzo." I had assembled this huge master mix of like 4 minutes of just endless bad versions of the national anthem, and then I just didn't have the heart. I just couldn't bring myself to play because it just sounds. But I wanted to play a little bit of this for you, Don, because you hadn't heard it. This is Kat De Luna, and yes. She was singing the national anthem in Dallas, and this is what you I think had mentioned where. This is a thing where I think it's only bad. This is all in the ear of the beholder because this is either great or it's awful, depending on who you are. Let's see if I've got the right cut here. And by the way, the thing that immediately makes me dislike this, just like from jump, is the way that she is introduced. It's like it is just one shade away from the whole thing of giving yourself a nickname.
Tonight's featured entertainer is 20-year-old pop sensation Kat De Luna.
I mean, if you were actually introduced as being a pop sensation,
yeah,
I mean, it either seems really appropriate or really inappropriate.
Years ago, we were in Los Angeles for the Pac-10 basketball tournament, and Oregon was playing the very first game of the day, which was at the time the only time that they would do the national anthem because there'd be like four games in one day. And so we're standing there, we're standing baseline, and the PA announcer comes over, "Would you please stand and remove your hats to honor America from Death Row Records?" And Chuck Culpepper, our columnist at the time, leans forward and looks at me, and I lean forward and look at him, and we both just go, mouth, oh, my God. And then I look to my left, and Suge Knight was standing over there watching some brief protege whose name I don't remember. She came, she sang, she left, and I was like, holy hell, that's Suge Knight.
Wow. What year would this have been?
Oh, it would have been early 2000s, 2003 maybe, 2002.
2002, so that would have been, I guess that would have been maybe post-lockup. Suge Knight.
Yes.
Is that when he was out of Sheraton?
Must have been. But yeah. Just always loved that. To honor America from Death Row Records.
Let's see. So let me just get a little bit of... This is for you, Don.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
Wait for it.
What so proudly we at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the pale.
When did it become? Let me ask you this: Is this a Sarah McLachlan thing? When did it become an acceptable singing style for your voice to crack five or six times during a song?
Yeah, I blame Sarah McLachlan and Tori Amos.
That is
entirely their fault.
That is a weird little trill that Sarah McLachlan had in her songs, which worked for her because it was like an audio trademark of sorts. But then it just kind of became a thing that everybody sort of did.
And that's the vocal thing, the instrumental thing that everybody does. And this is from years and years and years of hearing arena versions of people doing that song. Anybody with an instrument has to have their one Hendrix moment where even if they're playing a flute, they do some kind of a dive bomb in the middle of the thing.
Totally. Where they, as Don said earlier, why one note when 75 notes can be jammed into that measure?
When I was a sports writer, I came to love the people that would come in, get out, the amount of time that it was meant to do, and
right.
Just go.
Well, because it seems like doing the national anthem is... It's like if you try some weird off-kilter take on it, or you try to oversing it, or you try to put your own stamp on it too much, it's like what you will gain by doing that successfully pales in comparison to what you will lose when you F it up. And Christina Aguilera, I mean, you know, I guess she has a good voice and everything, but A, we're judging that on a curve because we judged her against Britney Spears and Jessica Simpson. And also, it's like, just because you got a good voice and you have a relatively powerful voice does not necessarily mean that everything needs to be sung at maximum volume all the time from the beginning of the song.
I may have told you this before. I don't know. My favorite national anthem I ever saw at a sporting event was high school band night at Dodger Stadium one year. And they had something like 30 high school marching bands on the field all at the same time. And they did a medley of Henry Mancini hits. Conducted by Henry Mancini. And then after that, and it was to hear like all these marching bands with all these tubas doing, you know, dun 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 dun. It's awesome. And the Pink Panther theme, that was great. But then they did the Star Spangled Banner. And the problem was that it appeared that with like the 30 or so high school marching bands, there were at least four different arrangements. Sheet music arrangements that they had practiced
simultaneously,
and then they were all attempting to play at the same time. But it was very obvious that they had slightly different tempos, different arrangements, and it was just a cacophonous mess. Ugh. And it was delightful.
Awesome. Well, it's a really, I mean, I'm going to say it's a badly written song, but it's a difficult song
it
to
is.
Sing. If you've ever tried to sing it front to back all the way through, it just astounds me though that anybody would have gone out there like Christina Aguilera would have gone out without a teleprompter. I mean, it's...
So, was it really bad? I missed it. I was in the back, like, sharpening the tools that I was going to jam in my ears at halftime.
It wasn't really bad. She muffed up one of the lines. She basically sang the second line twice. She conflated the second line with whatever the correct line was supposed to be. I can probably...
No matter how nerve-wracking it may be to sing, like, at the Super Bowl, and it's got to be even for somebody, you know, that... You know, who's performed as much as she has, it's got to be a little bit nervous making.
That's the biggest audience of your career.
Yeah. But this still, you've got to think to yourself, well, I know the Star Spangled Banner. You're not going to think I need a teleprompter. I mean,
no, but, see, think but yourself, beyond teleprompter, usually the words are on every freaking scoreboard in the stadium, and that stadium's got a lot of scoreboard.
See, and that's the other thing is that it would not be so difficult just to have sheet music in front of you, but that is the problem with television. The problem with television is that everything is set up for the benefit of the audience at home as opposed to the people who are there or the performer, which is why, and I guess if you're a performer and if you're somebody who is not just a singer but who is an entertainer, you probably don't want to you probably don't want to be blocked by a big, clipboard or a big music stand in front of you. Again, having it on the Jumbotron is always an idea. But then you get like the 9 billion flashbulbs going off.
And then, of course, people going, I can't believe she was reading the words off the Jumbotron. Does she not know the words to the Star Spangled Banner?
And maybe that's it. I mean, maybe that's the problem is that if she's afraid if she has a teleprompter or something, that she's going to get mocked for not knowing the words to the national anthem. But I mean, I would think that ship has sailed because we've all seen bands play. I mean, I saw Guns N' Roses play, however long ago. I think it was when they were just here at the Rose Garden a couple years ago, and Axl Rose had the words to Welcome to the Jungle on a goddamn teleprompter in front of him.
Well, I'm saying, and if somebody did give you a hard time about it, you'd certainly be within your rights to
Jackass,
say,
why don't you sing it in front of a billion people?
You know how many people were watching that? I was nervous. I want to make sure I didn't screw it up.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather be mocked for having a teleprompter in front of me than be mocked for forgetting the words on national television, which is a thing that, like, because now the problem with being Christina Aguilera with this is that this is like Dan Rather holding up the George Bush things like, he never served, say these Photoshop documents, is that it'll be mentioned in like every news story about her for the next 5 years and whenever she dies. Mm-hmm. That'll be there. So, in any event.
At least the Black Eyed Peas provided her cover later.
Oh, man. Here's the thing about you want to talk about something that is so loud and so gaudy and yet so bland, just so unbelievable. That's the thing. It wasn't even bad. It was just uninteresting.
It was awful.
When did they morph into being? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, two things. Slash was at Spirit Mountain on Friday. Slash went from Spirit Mountain to the Super Bowl and somehow downgraded himself. Between Michael Bay continuing with this Transformers thing and them doing Sweet Child of Mine, there appears to be a very, very real effort afoot to take a giant dump on my childhood.
We were making some efforts to get an interview with Slash because he was at Spear Mountain this last week. And wait, is it last week? Did I miss it already?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's come and gone. Yeah, it was Friday.
He really did go from Spirit Mountain to the Super Bowl.
Oh, literally. So it was like actually one to the other. Well, I guess it must have been. And so, but we were making some efforts to get him on. And for whatever reason, they were not really advertising or promoting the fact that he was playing at Spirit Mountain Casino. It was like I don't know how much they paid or like if it was one of those miscommunications where he signed paper one when he was trying to sign paper number four. And instead of playing like at the, a stadium somewhere, he's like playing for a bunch of blackjack, dealers or whatever, but they were not really
into
it.
He had some gambling debts he had to work off.
I mean, who knows? I don't know, because it was like him and like some pickup band, him and some gaggle of dudes.
I saw a billboard for it, so it's not like they were completely hiding the fact.
The thing is, he has always always just been such a whore, though, for that. Yeah. I mean, it's like Slash. I mean, I guess to his credit, because he's still, you know, internationally famous and probably considered an A-list rock guitarist even now. But he would just appear on anybody's record, anybody's video. Doesn't matter. He would just you would just see him show up like you would just see. There was a period of time, especially in the early 90s, where you would be at like any show. And it's like you would just count down until it's like seeing any show in Portland and you wait for that Tommy Two-Tone guy to run up on stage. Except it was like anywhere in the world with Slash and he would just appear. So, I mean, but even he didn't really inject any.
No,
he was kind of phoning it in.
No, it was awful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just I would really love it if for next year's Super Bowl halftime they just did 15 minutes, highlights, local news and weather, and then back with the second half. I think if nothing else, the Black Eyed Peas successfully killed Super Bowl halftime.
We were talking about this earlier today. I was saying that in a way, and I don't even know how I describe this or what it would be, but something smaller. I mean, if it was possible to do a small but sort of powerful performance, you know, that seems like conversely that would actually that would have the paradoxical effect of being very powerful and being impressive.
They keep trying to go bigger and bigger in a 10-minute slot, which you can't do. And Prince perfected it in 2007. I mean, you're never going to get better than Prince's giant demonic schlong shadow in the rain while playing Purple Rain. I mean, they should have stopped it right then.
Well, and plus, the other thing about television is you know, as much as they say the television adds 10 pounds, whatever, television reduces everything else. So it doesn't matter how big something is. It's like seeing a home movie of the Small World ride where you go, I don't get it. It's just it's a thing. You know, it's like, but unless you're in it, you don't know that the untold layers of hell that ride contains. Unless you're at the Super Bowl, you know, it's like I have this I have some bootleg Kiss videos, and you know, Kiss, you know, they put on a very overwhelming, I mean, it is an assault on the senses, their show from beginning to end. But you see a videotape of it, and you're just going like, I don't know, it's just some guys playing guitar, and there's pyro. And you don't get a sense of the bigness. That's the thing with the Super Bowl, is they're doing it for the crowd that's there and not the much larger crowd that is watching. And so none of it translates. God damn, remember watching last year with The Who? I think The Who is actually – that's when I quit caring. Yeah. That was just the nadir of the entire thing, was The Who following on goddamn Paul McCartney, who – I mean, I know he's Paul McCartney and I'm not. But I mean, it was just excruciating. It was just painful.
You know, and I guess I applaud the NFL for wanting, as much as I like the aging white rockers, wanting to get away from the aging white rockers. Right. But you could have gone in any number of. I mean, CeeLo wasn't available. He won't even charge you to change the words to Forget You. He'll do that for free. CeeLo would have been great. Kanye would have been great.
Oh,
Rafael Sadiq has a new album coming out. Now, you can't sell a Super Bowl halftime on Rafael Sadiq, but I put his new video up on, which is about a month old. It's been out, but I just came across it this morning. I put it up on the blog today, and it's great.
I wonder if it might have just
like
been a budgetary consideration, because honestly.
Oh, they charged a lot.
Well,
the Black Eyed Peas. Actually, they don't get paid for that. But
the Black Eyed Peas will play anywhere, though. Yeah. I mean, I think it was sometime in the last year, I guess there was a website that the Black Eyed Peas had that you could go on their website, and there was actually a page just telling you how much they would charge for corporate events,
your bat mitzvah,
your birthday party, or whatever.
Most
fans
do that.
Apparently, they will do anything.
Well, most,
they will go anywhere.
Most artists do that, but most of them don't have like a drop-down menu on their homepage about it.
But no, the Super Bowl doesn't pay. I mean, but
it's just the exposure.
They're making a killing today on iTunes and everywhere else because somewhere somebody
enjoyed that.
See, that's my thing.
I got two things. One, and we'll start with the second one, and then work backward, and then we have some news tickets. I got to figure who else died. Because I've been racking my brain, I can't come up with it. Second thing, first, the funny thing about the Black Eyed Peas performing at the Super Bowl is, and maybe, look, maybe I travel in different social circles than some, and maybe it's an age thing. I don't know anybody who likes the Black Eyed Peas. Not one person. I don't know one single son. I know, you know what I know? I know a lot of people who used to like the Black Eyed Peas. I know a lot of people who liked the Black Eyed Peas until Fergie joined, or, you know, or an album beyond that. I don't know anybody that is currently a fan of the Black Eyed Peas. I know lots of people that loathe them.
Yeah, but somebody's still buying all those records.
I guess. I mean,
that's the thing. Some of our friends are lying to us, or we just don't run in those circles.
Maybe. I mean, and maybe it is just a thing where it's like a generational thing. But even then, it's like the Black Eyed Peas been around for like 15 years, so I can't be a generational thing that much. You just mentioned something. They had to have made an overture to Kanye West. They had to have. There's no way they didn't approach
him. I think the NFL would be afraid of Kanye. I really do. And it would have been awesome because George Bush was sitting there in the suite next to John Madden and Condoleezza Rice in this like axis of evil.
Do you think that they were weirded out by the idea of what he might do, or do they think he's too polarizing?
Both, probably. He's definitely polarized.
He's funny. The only guy in the world right now thinking about it that's probably big enough. He's probably the only single performer that is as big as the Super Bowl right now.
And he would have done a great job. Like, everybody was, you know, I was following when Coachella rolled out its lineup 2 weeks ago or whatever. And I was watching the reaction to it because I'm going down there in April. And, you know, everybody was like, oh, Kanye. I don't care if you like him as a person or not. He's fascinating as an artist, and he's going to put on a great show down there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is a guy who has, you know, and you know, my wife and I were talking about Kanye West the other day because I think it was when we were in Provo or something, his new record had just come out, and we were listening to it. And she didn't know what it was. She was listening to it without really hearing it. And she had not. She'd kind of written him off at some point. I think largely because of, you know, sort of the media depiction of him and a lot of his sort of admittedly like jackassish behavior. And he does juggle a lot of facets of his persona simultaneously. Yes. And one of those is a-hole. And there's no getting around that. And so I think she had just sort of written him off as somebody she wasn't interested in. And she said, this is a great song. What is it? I said, oh, it's a new Kanye West. And so we had a long discussion about that. And when we got home, I actually showed her, like, I showed her the Spike Jonze video, the Spike Jonze short movie that he had made for Kanye West last year, I guess 2 years ago now. And she was just astounded by it. And I was making the case that he really is right now the most complicated and interesting performer in popular music, period, in contemporary popular music. There is no one else. And he probably is the only person. You could argue that if done correctly or incorrectly, depending on who you are, he might actually overshadow the Super Bowl itself. I mean, so that's – I could see why they were a little leery of that. But it's like, you know, all the old white guys the last few years, that in itself was a reaction to Janet Jackson,
right,
and Justin Timberlake. So,
but Portland Cello Project recently did a Kanye cover, and I'm blanking on the name of the song right now. They just went over like 100,000 views of the video.
Wow.
Of it on YouTube, and they went in the studio and they recorded it.
Awesome.
And it's funny reading the YouTube being like one of the most dangerous comment sections in the world. But the number of people are just like, Kanye West is a jackass. Well, that doesn't really have anything to do with what we're talking about here.
Right.
I mean, look at what they were able to, you know, what the Portland Cello Project was able to do with his song, and they were able to do something that cool because there was such a great musical base to it to begin with.
Well, that's one of the things that makes me love Kanye West so much, is seeing the hatred that he brings out in people.
Yeah.
Because that's how you know that he is doing – that's how you know that he's doing it right. Because clearly – not unlike Johnny Rotten before him, not unlike Muhammad Ali, not unlike any number of shock rockers, not unlike, I mean, there's any, in the list of performers who realize that there's equal currency to be had in the public loving and the public loathing you, I mean, is endless. And he's just the latest guy to do it, but he does it better than anybody in recent memory.
Yeah.
And the proof is how you just mention his name to people and they get angry, which is a powerful thing. You know, you got to work hard to have that degree of infamy. Let's be honest. We all know a million douchebags. It takes more than just being – I mean, if being a jackass is all it took, then like half the guys who live on my street, would be famous. And, you know, it takes a lot more than that.
They should go into sports talk radio.
Let's see. We should just roll on ahead here because we're going to, you know, duck out a little bit earlier than we normally would today, relatively speaking. So it's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, we do have a double snuff watch.
All right. Before we do that, I should take just this one tiny moment to say that the double snuff watch and much of today's program brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out. Okay, I hit that funeral parlor button again by mistake. Hold on a second. Let's try this.
Oh, that's.
I don't even
better.
Know what this is. Oh, whatever. SquiresElectric.com.
I hope you have a 1930s movie reel ready.
Our boys on the front.
Were there movies in the 30s?
I don't know. I'm just picturing. Ready to give Jerry a taste of their steel. Well, in any event, Squires Electric can be contacted at SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. It's an all skate. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. They've been in Portland for going on 13 years. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. You know what our friend Seamus said over the weekend, actually? He sent me, because the listener of our Seamus lives in Denver where it was 18 below for a lot of last week. He just moved into the house, had torn out all the heating and the carpeting, and then the snow just came out of nowhere, this huge, huge cold plunge. No carpeting, no heating in most of the house, and the house was 38 degrees in everywhere but the basement where it was a cozy 65.
It is February, and it was Colorado. I don't know if we can say the snow came out of nowhere.
It does seem like it's the kind of thing you might have seen coming, but, you know, what are you going to do? So he actually sent me an email. He's like, you know, if Squires Electric had a branch office here in Denver, they would have made 12 grand this weekend when I finally couldn't take it anymore, and I just had to call somebody to come install the goddamn wiring in the house. So this is the thing where it's like you get to a point where you just realize you're not going to be able to fix something yourself, you're not going to get it done yourself, or you just don't have the time to do it. Even if you understand how electricity works, you just don't really have the time to do it. You got a life to live. You got things to do, places to go, people to see. You contact Squires Electric, it's going to get done right. It's going to get done right the first time, and you will end up paying less for it in the long run. You can also get an estimate up front so you know about what it's going to cost you. 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. Longtime listeners of the Rick Emerson Show, so they're extended members of the family as well. Just good people.
God, loving this music.
Damn.
I say, Rick Emerson, that Squires Electric sounds like quite a bargain.
Doesn't it sound like the General Hospital back when it was a radio show or something? But Marjorie, that must mean that you, that I, hold me, kiss me. All right. And then like a guy comes on and talks about, say, Mom, 20 Mule Team Borax will take those stains out of Junior's clothing. I'm going to end this. All right, we're going to do this again.
And now, from the news desk. This
was that loud?
A little bit, yeah.
All right, sorry about that.
Okay, can we do that snuff watch now?
All right. Starting everything from scratch again. Here's your double snuff watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Sorry about that. The Bob Ralston organ music was set at a slightly different level than everything else.
It lulled me into a sense of complacency.
What I realized is, you know that Star Wars music that we bring Aaron Duran on with? The Bob Ralston organ music that we were just playing was on the same bank of sounds, and they were all turned down to like 10% because it was playing underneath Aaron. So that's why everything else is so much louder. Okay. Sorry about that. Rick Emerson regrets the error.
Cult actress Tora Sutana died of heart failure in a Reno, Nevada hospital at the age of 72, according to the Los Angeles Times. While she appeared on television shows such as Burke's Law and The Man from U.N.C.L.E., the Japanese-born actress is best known for her role as Varla, the leader of a pack of thrill-seeking go-go dancers in the 1965 flick Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill.
You want to talk about a movie that just created an entire, I mean, I'm not going to say that it created a whole fetish because clearly Russ Meyer had that mental territory well staked out. But, I mean, I think it probably – it either gave license to men and probably not a few women to explore that fetish or to openly be interested in it, or it exacerbated and intensified a fetish that was sort of bubbling under the surface. That of the huge-breasted woman who kicks the snot out of you by the side of the highway.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm sure that was probably a fetish that already existed.
But it brought it into the mainstream, wouldn't you? I mean, to whatever extent Faster Pussycat Kill Kill was a mainstream movie.
Of course, Russ Meyer's ladies were not just ladies with large breasts. They were ladies with ginormous breasts.
They were massively endowed.
Terrifyingly large breasts.
Yeah.
Russ Meyer himself thought that the film was a loser when it was first released in 1965, but it experienced a resurgence in art houses and on the festival circuit in the 1990s. Following her brief marriage to John Sutana, Tora Sutana dated Elvis Presley and then in 1981, she married retired L.A. police detective Endel Jorman, who died in 2000.
She was also a nurse at one point, and this is after Faster Pussycat Kill Kill.
Wow.
So that's going to be weird. You're just laying in bed and the Tora Sutana comes in. And so she got her last name from Phil Sutana or whatever his name is?
I guess so, yeah. That was
I was just a figure that was a stage name front and back. I knew that Tora was her first name. Her name was Tora Kamaguchi, I think, was her birth name. She was born in Japan, Japanese dad, mom from like Nebraska or something. And which is why she does have such an unusual mix of features. She's a woman that I think today they would call exotic looking.
Yes.
But exotic translates to what are you? What she was like 100 feet tall and just and as you said, to call her bosomy or curvaceous really is to undersell it by a factor of like 1,000.
Yeah. The film critic Michael Wilmington called her the Arnold Schwarzenegger of bad girls. Clad in black leather with a yawning cleavage, she's almost insanely voluptuous. Sutana looks like a comic book temptress come to life.
I mean, she does. She looks like a caricature drawing of herself. It's funny if you read her her autobiography, and I don't know if this is probably not true, but her autobiography actually states, and I've seen the story passed along elsewhere, like without. It's one of those things that I think everybody realizes is probably not true. But they just sort of smile and they go with it because it's awesome. That in her autobiography, she actually describes Say this story sort of carefully because it's the sort of thing that will not sound like an awesome story at first. In her autobiography, she describes developing at a very young age and being the object of a lot of unwanted attention from men. In her autobiography, she does tell a story about being sexually assaulted when she was a younger girl. But then in this autobiography, goes on to say about how she waited many years and then hunted each of the men down and extracted her own bloody revenge. Which was then repeated like in regular, like straight biographies of her, like, and just news articles would report this. And it would be like, over the following years, each of the men received a visit from Satana, who extracted her own brand of vengeance. I'm like, are you effing me? Really? They would just sort of print it, yeah, as though it were like a fact. And I think it's because they all went, well, this is crap, but it's awesome crap. Yeah. So God bless her. All right. So that's, now I have no idea who the second Snuffwatch is.
Well, in July, you might remember the story of Anopka, the 18-year-old female donkey who was strapped to a parachute forced to sail over a Russian beach.
The donkey screamed and the children cried.
Yes.
Okay.
The stunt garnered plenty of negative publicity as horrified beachgoers uploaded a video of it to YouTube. Well, that donkey has died.
By the way, the donkey is the inspiration for the drawing that lurks on the whiteboard, right, of Greg and Sarah riding a donkey that is plunging to earth.
Yes. Onlookers said children at the beach burst into tears at the sight of the wailing, frightened donkey. The donkey was dragged through the ocean when it landed. There was an animal cruelty investigation, but charges were not piled. But the animal was taken from its owners, who rented it to the parasailors for the promotional stunt, and placed on a farm outside Moscow.
God damn.
Which, according to the newspaper Pravda, it recently died of heart failure.
I mean, it's one of those things that's sort of like, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly sort of thing, where some guy in Russia just went, I have a smashing idea. We will shove donkey out of plane. And then it's like the next thing you know, you just cut to the inside of a plane where there's a donkey going, and then a guy going, get out, and booting it out the door.
And the donkey is screaming in fear and children are crying.
And children are just weeping and onlookers are screaming in horror. And it just is the best story we've read in years.
Yeah.
And so now the donkey is dead.
Donkey is dead. And they're unsure if the donkey's heart problems are related to it being shoved out of a plane.
What are the odds?
But,
could be hereditary.
Damn. All right. I'm glad. Well,
did the donkey's dad die?
The donkey has a certain brand of immortality, though. I mean, there's a certain, in a way, that donkey will live forever.
It's one of the most famous donkeys ever.
I'm more famous than any other donkey I can think of. Mm. I mean, because Francis the Talking Mule, a mule, not a donkey.
Right.
Now, there you go. There's your double snuff watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. By the way, speaking of Greg and Sarah, a story that I meant to tell, I think last week actually, but just I'd forgotten about it, and I think we had actually, I think we had written it down, and we had decided not to talk about it on Fun Employment Radio. We were going to wait and talk about it here, and then I forgot about it until last night when my wife was sitting on the couch, and she said from the other room, goes, "Have you ever been to that website, damnyouautocorrect.com?" And I said, "Why, yes, I have." Ryan White, have you been to damnyouautocorrect.com?
I have not, but I have heard of it.
Oh, my God. You got to go there. Here's the thing, and she noted this. A lot of times, this is how she described it. When people will tell you that something is laugh-out-loud funny, especially now, the phrase lol just crops up with appalling regularity. Like, 99 times out of 100, whatever it is, isn't really laugh-out-loud funny. Especially for somebody like me. It takes a lot to get me to really laugh-out-loud or belly laugh. Damnyouautocorrect.com is, in fact, laugh-out-loud funny. Because they are... Sorry, that was my phone.
Okay.
Strangely enough,
we all just stopped dead.
The weirdest sound there.
Brownies are ready.
If only
the autocorrect fairy has.
Rick owes us brownies.
But it's just people who have have been using the iPhone with the autocorrect feature turned on. And when I was first thinking about getting an iPhone, my friend Lisa, she goes, "Well, my husband got one of those, but he's a little undecided about the autocorrect feature." And I was like, "Well, why would you be undecided about it?" DamnYouAutocorrect.com really does illustrate why. You get a spare a moment or two, you really ought to go check it out because it's just some of the most. It really is a collection of the most hilarious and awkward and inappropriate auto corrections that you will ever see in your life. And it reminds me of – and so Laura was reading some of them off the screen. And it occurred to me that, we never told the story of when we were going on Fun Employment Radio last Monday. And it was, I don't know, it was like maybe 4 PM or something. And I was getting – I had just posted the files from that day's show. And we were getting ready to go on Fun Employment Radio, which – because our show is live, but theirs is taped. They tape it and then they put it up at 6 PM. And I was getting ready to post something on Twitter. And I caught it at the last moment. And I said notes for today's show will be posted up later. Right now, Dawn Taylor and I are going to go raping with Sarah and Greg. Or it was like today's raping is about to begin, or like we must, you know, now, you know.
About to begin raping with Sarah and Greg and Sarah. Yeah.
And it was the thing where it's like I backed up and I erased the word and I started to, and it corrected it again, quote corrected. Like 3 times in a row it changed tape to rape. And it was, you know, and you do realize that is where – that's where technology has really what with all the intercommunication going on, technology has made it possible to alienate like half your family and earn the ire of about 3/4 of the globe with just one misspelled word and one press of one button. So if you get a chance to see this, if you want to see this in action, if you get a chance, go to damnyouautocorrect.com. It really is fantastic. By the way, speaking of we don't have time to do a full geek watch on this. Speaking of the iPhone, I believe the iPhone for Verizon comes out today.
Yes.
I believe that is released today because I've already gotten messages like the following. This says, Rick, hypocritical moment for the day. Just received my shiny new Verizon iPhone. Says a listener who I will not identify, but who has mocked us relentlessly over the last few months for talking about our iPhones ad nauseum. So, Ryan White, you're on the iPhone bandwagon, are you not? All right.
My problem with autocorrect is it just frustrates me that it doesn't know me well enough at this point to know how much I swear.
Does it learn?
I was complaining about this, and Courtney Hommeister from LiveWire told me that if you go into Safari and do a search for like each expletive,
right.
It will then be in its memory, and it will not correct. That will impact the autocorrect, and it will not try and correct my F-bombs and my.
If I go to the Safari on the phone,
yes.
So if I search like on Google or something, just on the phone's browser, then it goes into some stored cache of words.
Yes. So then you can swear without it trying to correct you.
Or she's just trying to tell you this so that it's in, like, you know, your Google history.
Well,
she's
Googling just butt sex all day.
She told me she and a couple of other people had been sitting around going, like, they were just going through their search terms and the vulgarities that they had programmed in there. And just, you know, one particularly wonderfully foul-mouthed person had quite a run of phrases.
That's fantastic. Well, you know, it's like that way with my voice recognition software, where I'll find that I actually have to, occasionally I do want to swear, and then it's like you have to go back and type the thing over again. So I will actually take the time to train, which is then hilarious because it makes you say each word 3 times to sort of learn a brand new word, so that it, you know, obliges you to just sit in your office and just swear like a bastard all day long. Because when you open the little training section of your software, it's like while I'm here, I might as well just put in all those other words I know I will inevitably use. So it's like a half an hour of just nothing but blue talk coming from my office at home. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Well, we mentioned this during Legion of News, but it's worth mentioning again here on the Rick Emerson Show. The Portland Rose Festival is recruiting clowns for the Clown Corps who perform at the Rose Festival Parade. Auditions are March 16th and 17th. So if you're local and you want to be a clown in the Rose Parade.
And who doesn't?
You should call 503-227-2681 or go to rosefestival.org, O-R-G, and find out how to audition to be a clown.
I just want to know what the Clown Corps does. I mean, there can't possibly...
No, you don't.
Well, because otherwise I just imagine that they are dispersed through the city, you know?
Like, well, it's for the parade.
Grease-painted gorillas.
They hang out in alleys.
they lurk around the malt shop waiting to shiv you.
You know the Jack in the Box? They jump out of dumpsters.
Or if it's just like because otherwise I got to imagine that there's a clown parade of some kind happening. And that's just, you know, that's just too terrifying.
Do you really have to audition for, like, advertise for clowns in this town? I could have sworn I just saw on some TV show that everybody was posting on the internet that we have clowns coming out of our, like, have clowns coming out of our rain boots.
Well, let me tell you. Clowns everywhere.
If you go to rosefestival.org /events/clowncore, There's an actual PDF of an application to
really?
Fill out.
And a photo of a clown about to eat a small child.
I will read you what it says.
Please
it says,
do.
After an award-winning debut in 2008 and successful 2009 and 2010 seasons, the Character Clown Corps, presented by Amtrak Cascades, are back for another year of contributing their special blend of love and laughter to the Rose Festival and the local community. The Character Clown Corps are named for one of the best educational programs in the world for festivals and events by the IFEA, whatever that is. The Clown Corps is directed by an avant-garde clown professional, Angel Ocasio. The Character Clown Corps has appeared at various road festival events like the Waterfront Village, the Fred Meyer Jr. Rose Parade, blah, 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 blah. Oh, the clowns have also made appearances on KGW News Channel 8 with Drew Carney and KPTV Fox 12 with On the Go with Joe.
Are there requirements listed for actually being part of the Clown Corps?
Well, I'm not sure. It says they has brought together 60 people ages 14 to 74 from the Portland area, Eugene and Silverton, and extending to our neighbors across the bridge in Vancouver and Longview. Joining us this year will be 25 new clowns who will embark on an exciting adventure of zany, fun-filled buffoonery at various Rose Festival events.
Stopping now and again to spray the blood off of their uniforms.
So, yeah, you can fill out an application, and there will be auditions where I guess you will have to go do your clown thing, and you could become one of the 25 new clowns for the Clown Corps.
I just wonder, I want to find somebody who is relatively young who has begun clowning and just say, like, what is your deal? Like, what is the day when you said to yourself, like, this is what I'm going to do with my life? Because there are people who travel. It's like, you know, that like the circuses, just because we're all, like, you know, old doesn't mean, well, you'll get to figure this out because you got a kid now, so you're going to be going to a circus at some point. The circuses have not gone away. They're out there, and they have all of the same things that the circus had when you were a kid, which means that there's a new crop of clowns coming, like, every year. And there must be some, I mean, there's a moment in somebody's life when they say, like, this is my calling. And I really, as much as we sort of make fun of it, I'm honestly curious. Like, what makes someone, it's like when you find somebody who's a rodeo clown for a living. Like, what is the day? Like, it can't just be like a thing that father hands down to son, you know, like a musket from the Civil War or something.
Perhaps we should see if we can get a boss clown.
He's the guy that swings his pocket watch
Angel
and beats the
Ocasio.
Other clowns.
PBR's in town, too, I think, if you want to get your rodeo clowns on.
Yeah.
I think pro bull riders are at the Rose Garden. At least they were over the weekend. All their trucks were sitting out back when I drove by the other day.
Rodeo clowns I respect because they do something that's actually dangerous.
Well, it's dangerous, but all the more reason to ask, like, how is it that you ended up doing this for a living? I'm kind of like Studs Terkel in that way, that I find I have this fascination with people and their jobs and how they come to do what they do for a living, especially if it's something that they chose, something that they weren't sort of shuttled into, if it's something that they made a conscious decision. They said, I'm going to put the caps on toothpaste tubes all the live long day. It's like, well, why did you do that? You know, there are other jobs available. Why have you chosen this one? Rodeo clowns are at the top of that list. No lie. That is the job that and proctologist. Because, yeah, there's a lot of money in it. But, I mean, you're looking at asses all day. I mean, it's like you don't want to think it's because of some fetish, but there's got to be some reason for it, right?
Well, yeah. When Patrick was in the hospital, there was that point where we saw a number of doctors. And you do start wondering. It's like, Where's the point at which you go, urology? That's for me.
There's a point where you got to pass because you're just surrounded by gunk all the time, and you just decide that that's a thing you'd rather not have any part of. Mm. All right, it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I know that we discussed social distortion. Trombone Shorty, you're going to be going to see. Is
yes.
that what else is on your horizon, Ryan White of the Oregonian?
Oh, and then we got to get ready for Jazz Fest. So.
Which you say with such excitement. Every time it's like you're just filled with the vitality and zest of being alive.
Yeah, it's just an uphill climb for me. There are some really good shows. I mean, Esperanza Spalding will be here. Maceo Parker's coming. There's some really cool stuff. I just don't know anything about it yet.
This is like when early on in a relationship when my wife would take me to some sort of a reading at a feminist bookstore. And she would just say, no, there's going to be some really well-known writers there. And she would reel off like 19 people I had never heard of. And I would just sort of make a note to myself, like, to take something small and concealable that I could read at slack moments during the event. So just, you know. Is that what's coming up in the paper as well?
Yeah, we got to work on that A&E stuff. We'll write about the Trombone Shorty and social distortion shows. We've got actually up online. The first of what we hope will be many similar but different types of videos. We went and hung out with the rock band Derby, and they they played acoustic songs for us because we're just two guys with a you know, a microphone and a video camera, and so the full rock band thing was probably going to blow the camera up.
You should do a whole bit where you just do an ongoing thing where you just go to the houses of bands or musicians in Portland and you just surprise them. You show up on their front porch like a Sunday and then demand that they play you a song on the guitar that instant. That would be great, don't you think? You just sort of show up like the Shins guy. You know, you just go like, hey, Shins guy. You know, and he has to go, hey, we're from the Oregoni. We got a camera. You got to play us a guitar. Get your guitar. Play us a song right now. Do it.
You just test that. Everybody in Portland's in a band and just pick a block and go door to door. And whether or not there's any bands in there or not, play us something.
That's a great idea, actually. Where you just say, like, you know, it could be, you know, you could maybe if you want to up the stakes a little bit, make it an original. Where you just knock on a guy's door and go like, look, if you got an original composition, you got to play it for us right now. And if so, like, we'll put it up. It doesn't matter. Good, bad, you know, middle of the road, doesn't matter. We'll put it up on our website. Go.
There needs to be an or else there, though. There's got to be something to make them do it.
No, and this is where my imagination fails me.
And as I would imagine, since you can see me and nobody else can, you would probably imagine that I'm not very good at fighting. So threats are...
Well, okay. Well, fair enough. I'll put that back in the hopper. Hello, Don Taylor. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
What is your assessment on the time to do this top five?
I think we have time.
Okay. Here's the thing. I gotta be at like southeast like fifth about at like 3:30.
I'd say no.
Really?
Do you have to be there? You have to be there like in the building at 3:30. You have to actually be there for your appointment.
Well, I don't know. That's if I want to be. If I want to be man next to mattress.
Because I'm a big believer in getting places a few minutes early, and just in case there's traffic and problems. Suppose, and things. You
know, he's kind of with Dawn on that one.
Here's the thing: is like the auditions never ever start on time ever, ever. Because there's always a guy in there that's got to find his muse. There's always some dick in front of you, you know, and he's always in a black leather jacket and he's got slick black hair and he's like 60, and he's auditioning for the part of teenage boy or something, and he wants to tell you about like some car commercial he filmed in Spokane and how that was a real great set. Let me tell you about the craft services you had there, and it's like, you know.
We don't have time for the top five.
Really?
We need to knock it out in about 10 minutes so that we could wrap up the show and then get out of here.
Okay.
So we don't have time for it.
Well, that makes me sad, Don.
Well, it makes me sad, too.
I'm a sad panda. You've never met a sadder panda than myself. Well, let me do this. I'll do clue number one for this week's Name That Snack contest. Then we'll do the clergy watch. Then we'll bring a curtain down on all of this.
Okay.
How about that?
All right.
Don't forget to join us tomorrow when we'll talk to Joelle Carter, pardon me, who plays Ava Crowder on the FX series Justified, which is fantastic, and which returns Wednesday. Hey, is House on tonight? Do we know?
It is indeed.
It is indeed. Okay, so tomorrow we'll do our House recap as well. Without further ado, here is, pardon me, here is clue number one. For this week's installment of Name That Snack, brought to you by E.H. Vending. That's ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. You can find out more about them by going to, of course, ehvending.com. Or you can call them. They have not one, but they have two different phone numbers for you, depending on what city you are in. If you're in Vancouver, you can call Josh, who is the owner, at 360-816-1853, or James at 503-897-8255. 04. If you're finding that if your employees are plotting to overthrow you, or perhaps plotting your bloody demise, you might be able to forestall that a little bit just by, you know, buy them off basically with some fat and some sugar. I'm just saying, if Ceausescu had a vending machine, who knows how Romania might have unfolded as a country. You can't overstate the. Let me just say this, by the way, and speaking of fat and sugar, so you know what somebody posted on my Facebook page? You know that Mrs. Freshly's peanut butter wafer chocolate bar thing? So somebody posted a link to, I guess you can get that at the dollar store, and they're 10 for a dollar. 10 of those for a dollar. That's all I'm saying. So I'm just going to put that out there. Those apparently can be purchased at the dollar store, 10 for a dollar.
Well, it's going back to what you were just saying, though, you know how Mubarak stayed in power in Egypt for 30 years.
Ding-dongs?
Vending machines.
Really?
Yes. Keeping the people happy with vending machines.
You know, here's the thing about food. If you think about the number of problems in your life from which you have been distracted, or things like, if you were to take like the metric tonnage, you know, of discomfort or unpleasantness or, you know, work or some sort of emotional upset that you have either diminished or eliminated altogether, or just smothered by ingesting a box of donuts. I mean, really, there is no problem that can't be. I'm not going to say it's going to cure your problems. There's no problem that can't be temporarily, tamped down, with the proper application of snack foods. I mean, it really is a wonder drug when you think about it. I mean, you just open yourself a box of Zingers, bam. That's like 25 minutes where you're not thinking about whatever ails you. Unless whatever ails you is heart disease. In any event, ehvending.com is the website, or you can contact Josh at 360-816-1853 or James at 503-897-8204. And so if you are the decision maker at a business, or if you're somebody who works at a place where they really ought to have a vending machine, but they don't yet, or if you're, the guy that, is dealing with the vending company, they're just charging you too much or just being inflexible, if there's just jackassery going on, you talk to EH Vending. They're going to find something that works with your budget. Contact them at ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. All right, here is clue number one for this week's Name That Snack contest. And again, once Friday rolls around, once we give out Friday's clue, so not today, not tomorrow, once Friday comes around, we give out Friday's clue. If you are the first person to correctly identify this snack via snack@rickemerson.com, you win yourself a huge heaping helping of consumable goodness from EH Vending. This week's snack, clue number one, something in common with Texas. There you go. Something in common with Texas. Sounds like I'm doing a bad Karnak the Magnificent impersonation there. There you go. That is clue number one. All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We have, a clergy watch, yes?
Yes.
Here's your clergy watch for whatever the hell day this is, Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Well, I guess it would be nice.
Here is Don Taylor with your Clergy Watch.
A Brooklyn nun who claimed she was the victim of a brutal rape is now recanting her story, telling police she made the whole thing up to cover up a consensual sexual encounter with a bodega worker. According to police, the nun, identified as 26-year-old Mary Turcotte, told authorities she was attacked by a towering black man on the night of January 22nd as she made her way to the Apostles of Infinite Love convent on Glenwood Avenue in East Flatbush.
Let me ask you this. If you are a large, if you're a sizable and imposing black man, do you just assume, like, you just take it as
you're
read?
You're going to be blamed for everything?
At some point, yeah, a guy is just going to go like you in the car. He'd be like, okay, like it was your choice, like it was just coming, you know, like it was inevitable, and so you might as well just get it taken care of.
Turned out the incident never happened, and Turcotte was attempting to deter attention away from the real sex romp that reportedly happened.
A romp.
That reportedly happened inside the Brooklyn convent, sources told the New York Daily News. A woman who answered the door at the convent told the news Tuesday, nothing happened, none of it, it was all proven to be false, it wasn't her fault, she's going to move out, and we're going to get her some help. A week earlier, she had claimed her alleged attacker ambushed her before choking her to unconsciousness. The man then reportedly dragged her 8 blocks. Authorities grew suspicious of
her
story.
Which she knew because she was unconscious.
Well, yeah, and they also grew suspicious because they saw that she was wearing her nun's habit at the time, and nobody in the neighborhood saw a nun being dragged down the street by a towering black man. The nun told detectives she woke up in a snowbank with her breasts exposed and underwear pulled down to her ankles. Authorities immediately put out an alert searching for a black man between 40 and 50 years old, approximately 6'4" and 250 pounds. The search was called off after the nun came clean about her lie.
However, Dan Brown does now have the opening chapter to his next novel.
It took me, by the way, you're watching The Wire right now. You're just starting season two. I think you were saying this off the air that as you start season two of The Wire, you have learned not to become attached to any character.
No.
Because you never know when one of them is just going to get snuffed.
As soon as I find myself actually liking a character, I just go, stop it. Don't get attached.
Liking a character on The Wire is like liking a television series on Fox. You know it's going to get taken away at some point. It took me, by the way, speaking of The Wire, forever to figure, because as we were talking about the Baltimore patois, the accent, the dialect that they don't bother to explain or change, and your ears gradually adjust. They don't do that with any of the nomenclature either. It took me forever to figure out that on The Wire, when they refer to a number one male, that is a black male. And I guess a number two male is, I think that's white. But I couldn't figure out for the longest time that, that I actually had to go, this is how lame and in fact how white I am, that I in fact had to go online and Google it. I was online, like, looking up Baltimore street dialect or cop slang or something on the internet to try to figure out what they meant by that. So anyway, so yes, to answer the... Yes, to answer the question, yes, again with the black men. Yes, it was again with the black men. And he says, now I can't leave the house. All right. Sorry, sir. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. That was your clergy watch, yes? Anything
yes.
else to go with that? All right. There we go.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody has got a body like you. Because I got to have.
You know what there isn't as much of on the net as you'd think is nun porn. You'd think that there would be more nun-based pornography. And there just isn't. It's just not there, like in the abundance that you might imagine. I'm just saying. In case anybody was curious
I haven't
that.
Looked for nun porn, so I wouldn't know.
Okay. I'm just saying. It's, you know, if you're searching for it, it's okay. That's a whole evening. I'm just, you know...
I'm sure it is.
Okay, and yes, I'm saying there's none. Ha ha. All right, I'm just going to I'm just going to close this. I'm not even going to read any more of these. All right, we should end today's program. So I can go be
a... You were looking for it out of force of habit?
Thank you. Thanks so much. I have to go be man next to couch. Or attempt to be man.
I thought it was next to mattress.
Next to mattress. I don't know. It's in here. So I'll figure it out. Because that changes my whole motivation.
Oh.
You know what? You know, here's the thing is, like, I have the TiVo, so I don't watch a lot of TV commercials. One of the other reasons that I'm glad I don't do that is because if ever I have the TV just running in the background or something and the commercial is playing, it's like a law, apparently, that every single time I let the TV run in the background, I have to hear some commercial that I auditioned for and didn't get. And so then it's like I'm reminded about the, you know, another part. And then I have to see some dick who was better than me at, like, standing there and pointing and going, $5! Or whatever, you know, and then, and anyway.
So this is man next to mattress?
Man next to mattress.
Like an end table?
What?
Like you're the end table.
Oh, you mean just standing next to it? I believe it is a thing where they're going to go, like, you know.
You're admiring the mattress, or you're happy that you got such a good deal on
the
mattress?
I believe it's that the wife is expressing what a good deal is on the mattress, and I'm the nebbish, I'm the emasculated eunuch of a husband. Who's just standing there going, like, you know, and just
with
shrugging.
With your pockets pulled wrong side out to show you spent all your money.
A top hat like a Monopoly guy.
Women be shopping. and then they have the, and then the they zoom into the tagline can be given by some mush-mouthed kid that everybody thinks is cute because she's missing her teeth. And then they say free popcorn. Like that's anything you want when you go to buy, you know, like anything. I should just end the program. I'm just becoming bitter for no reason.
I think that's my fault. I think the Black Eyed Peas soured me.
You're pressing the wrong buttons and everything. We want to thank our guests, including Mr. Ryan White from The Oregonian. Read him in print in The Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com/music. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Joel Carter for the television program Justified. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, represented by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl and co-host the Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for listening, and please spread the word. It is Monday, February 7th, 2011. That is the frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. Have a good evening, and we will speak with you tomorrow at noon for Legion of News and shortly after 1 o'clock for this very fine radio program. Anchor of Legion of News next. Thanks for listening. Bye now.